Only as free as a padlocked prison door. Only as strong as our love for this land. Only as tall as we stand. For here is a land full of power and glory. The prettiest thing that you've ever seen.
Colin Powell did it with AOL Time Warner. John Ashcroft did it with Microsoft and Monsanto. Interior Secretary Gail Norton did it with BP Amoco. Condoleezza Rice did it with Chevron. Ooh, Donald Rumsfeld did it with Big Boy, Sears, Kellogg, and Allstate.
Of course the Bush administration's in bed with his corporate donors.
George Bush did it with Goldman Sachs, Citigroup.
Did you think they were giving it away?
Paid for by BillionaireForBush.com.
The Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Sarah Turner.
Employees of United Parcel Service filed a lawsuit on Monday against the world's largest package delivery company. The suit alleges violations of the Americans with Disabilities Act and claims that UPS has refused to reinstate permanently disabled employees in positions that would accommodate their medical restrictions. The suit also alleges that the company required employees returning to work following a medical leave of absence to provide a full medical release before they were permitted to work. It also says that the company refuses to meet with disabled employees to determine the extent of their disabilities. Filed in a federal court in Pittsburgh, if successful, the suit could cost the company millions of dollars and affect tens of thousands of employees.
A report released on Monday by the U.S. Commerce Department included the first new economic indicator from the U.S. Census Bureau in nearly 40 years. The new services indicator was created to more accurately gauge how service industries contribute to U.S. economic statistics. Frederick Knickerbocker, Associate Director for Economic Programs, Bureau of the Census, says survey data will be gathered quarterly now instead of annually.
If you add up all the services sectors, they're about $7.8 trillion. They are a gigantic piece of the American economy. They are the largest piece of the American economy. And so it's very important that we can begin to track quarter by quarter what's happening to sales, to revenues, the level of activity in these sectors. We're laying down the baseline to really begin to track these things on a quarterly basis.
Knickerbocker added these new numbers show revenues increased by 5.4% in key U.S. service industries.
Following in the footsteps of United Airlines, U.S. Airways has asked a judge for permission to skip a major pension payment due this week. The airline filed for bankruptcy for the second time in 2 years on Sunday, and it announced on Monday that it would not be able to make a payment to cover the pensions of machinists and flight attendants. The airline also said it's considering terminating those plans altogether. In addition, Delta Airlines said this weekend that it may file for bankruptcy if pilots continue to retire early. Pilots, concerned that the flagging airline may have to file for bankruptcy anyway, are choosing to retire early and take a lump sum payment of their pensions. Here's today's Dow Bob Report. The information technology market continues to weaken in the United States. A new poll of 500 hiring managers by the Information Technology Association of America reveals that 270,000 fewer IT workers will be hired this year than in 2003. A Department of Labor report released last month echoes the finding. Analysis of the report by Information Week revealed that the number of employed IT professionals has decreased by nearly 7% in the past 3 years, and IT unemployment has nearly doubled.
You've been listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
I've been a lifelong Republican since I was old enough to vote, and I thought that Bush would be a fiscally conservative individual. I feel betrayed. I don't believe that a government should be engaging in reckless spending, recklessly stretching the military to the point of breaking, recklessly trying to stretch, alter, and amend the Constitution, which this country was based on. And that's why I'm going to vote for John Kerry.
Move On Pack is responsible for the content of this advertisement.
If you think that the Bushites had no post-war plan for what they would do in Iraq after our military ousted Saddam, think again. You can see their plan in the extremist economic policies that were quietly and autocratically imposed on the Iraqi people during the reign of L. Paul Bremer III, who was our occupying czar there. While America's media establishment has been focused on the raging war by Iraqi insurgents and by the Bushites' attempt to enthrone a puppet government there, the neocon laissez-faire zealots in the administration have been gleefully using this ravaged country as their own ideological playground. For years, these Ayn Randian theorists have longed to create their utopia of a corporate state, and they've used the IMF, World Bank, WTO, and other monkey wrenches to try to implement their theories in Latin America and elsewhere. But they've never had an entire economy at their disposal, until they grabbed Iraq. While Baghdad was burning, Bremer arrived. Rather than putting out the fires, he used them as a distraction to issue decrees that instantly opened up Iraq to a total corporate takeover. For example, his decrees open up all of that nation's public assets to foreign corporate ownership, and they allow 100% of the country's industries, from banking to food, to be owned by foreigners. Also, Bremer ruled that 100% of the profits that foreign investors make in Iraq can now be hauled out of the country. There's no requirement that any of these profits be reinvested there, nor that the investors have to pay even a dime in taxes on the profits they haul away. This isn't liberation, as the Bushites call their Iraqi adventure. It's legalized looting and is fueling the continuing anger and armed resistance by the Iraqi people, who are determined not to have their nation looted. This is Jim Hightower saying, to get this full story, see Naomi Klein's explosive article in Harper's Magazine. You can read it at harper's.org.
38%.
46%.
42%.
I cut my payments in half.
How much can you cut your monthly student loan payments by refinancing with College Loan Corporation? To find out, just call 1-800-2-COLLEGE. You'll quickly be connected to an expert loan consultant who will answer your questions and tell you how you can cut your monthly payment by up to 50% by refinancing your federal student loans at rates as low as 2.63%. 1-800-2-COLLEGE. It's the smartest call you can make.
Hello from the road, folks. You know, the only thing better than a twofer is a threefer. That's why this fall I'm staying at Econo Lodge and Roadway Inn Hotels. See, I get triple Southwest Airlines Rapid Rewards credit every time, so I earn flights three times faster. Call 800-4-CHOICE or visit choicehotels.com. We'll see you there.
Offer good for qualifying stays in the U.S. before November 30th, 2004. For details, visit choicehotels.com. Triple credit means 1.5 credits instead of the standard 0.5.
Rapid and radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded. Here's Tom Hartman.
Well, they're starting to figure it out. They're finally starting to figure it out. The mainstream media, the Associated Press, both candidates often shift positions. Gee, George Bush is a flip-flopper? More of a flip-flopper than John Kerry. More stuff, more recently. They are starting to figure it out. The little fantasy is starting to be punctured. We'll get into that in a little more detail in a few minutes. Welcome, friends. Good to have you here with us. Tom Hartman here with you, broadcasting live coast to coast, border to border on terrestrial radio stations from California to North Carolina, beaming down from outer space on the Sirius satellite radio network and a radio system, and streaming around the planet on radiopower.org with archives at White Rose Society and on our website at tomhartman.com, where you can drop in and visit our chat room. Lots of live, fascinating, friendly, interesting, and often provocative activity there. You get to interact in real time with this talk show and this host. What a hoot. Our number, 1-866-889-8894, by the way, if you'd like to call in. At the bottom of the hour, we're going to have on a fellow from the Republican wing of the Republican Party who's going to try and tell us. This is the National Federation of Republican Assemblies going to try and tell us that John Kerry's a war criminal. That should be entertaining. Anyhow, to begin with, Well, the definition of fascism. I've talked about this many times in the past. I've written about it. If you go to TomHartman.com and click on Articles on Democracy, scroll down three or four stories to a piece I wrote a month or two ago about Henry Wallace, Henry A. Wallace, the vice president, Franklin Roosevelt's second vice president. He had either three or four vice presidents. He changed vice presidents just about every time he ran for re-election. And Henry Wallace was the vice president in the late 30s, early 40s. As I recall, he was the vice president prior to Harry Truman, which would have been, what, 40 to 44? Let's see, 32. Anyway, in that area, or in that era. And the definition, very clearly laid out, both by, you know, Americans who understand this stuff, and also by those, by Mussolini, who invented the word fascism. He created this word. It came from the fasce. The fasce was the symbol of the Roman Empire. The bundle of sticks with an axe sticking out of the top of it with a rope around it. And the theory, of course, was you can break one stick, you can't break a bundle of sticks. It's why the American eagle's holding 13 arrows in her claw. I mean, this is a symbol that's not just unique to the Romans. But Mussolini said, you know, we want to create a government that nobody can break. Let's bring others into it. Let's make it larger than just the government. Let's make it a really powerful alliance. And who are you going to bring into this alliance? Well, who's got the most power in the country? The corporations. And so Mussolini said, we're going to create a synthesis of corporations and the state. And to this day, in large part, that's the dictionary definition of fascism. Corporatism was the word that Mussolini first used in the late 20s and in the early 30s. He changed it to fascism, the merging of business and state interests. And now I'm pointing this out in what I consider to be absolutely brilliant fashion. Billionaires for Bush has a new 30-second ad out. Let me share this with
Colin
you.
Colin Powell did it with AOL Time Warner. John Ashcroft did it with Microsoft and Monsanto. Interior Secretary Gail Norton did it with BP Amoco. Condoleezza Rice did it with Chevron. Ooh, Donald Rumsfeld did it with Big Boy, Sears, Kellogg, and Allstate.
Of course the Bush administration is in bed with its corporate donors.
George Bush did it with Goldman Sachs, Citigroup, and Enron.
Did you think they were giving it away?
Paid for by BillionairesForBush.com.
Yeah, that's great. Billionaires for Bush, a new ad. These folks are doing great street theater. They're just absolutely great street theater. We're going to have to get a hold of them at one point. But anyhow, that is the definition of fascism, my friends. Here you have historically, an administration that is bringing corporate shills in, not by accident, but intentionally. You look at previous administrations and they would bring in public servants, people who understood how government works, people who understood what the commonwealth means, what the commons mean. They brought in people who were active participants in the process of democratic governance. You want to have somebody as Secretary of State instead of getting a guy like Colin Powell, who was one of the directors of AOL Time Warner. Instead of a national security advisor like Condoleezza Rice, who has an oil tanker named after her for her work in the oil industry. Instead of bringing in, the list just goes on and on and on. You look at the Kennedy administration. You look at the Johnson administration. You look at the Nixon administration. Look at the Eisenhower administration. They brought in people who understood the job. You want somebody for Secretary of State? Get a professional diplomat. Get somebody like James Schlesinger. Get somebody who's been there and done that. Somebody who understands what diplomacy is all about. You could argue, I suppose, that Colin Powell wasn't the worst choice that could be made. But, the guy was a general. Frankly, I think he should have been in charge of the Defense Department, not the State Department. The person in charge of the State Department should have been a career diplomat, somebody who understands diplomacy, somebody who has visited these countries, somebody who knows these foreign leaders, somebody who understands how the State Department works. Somebody who wouldn't make a fool of himself in front of the United Nations because a bunch of neocons fed him phony information that he knew was phony. Did you see Colin Powell on the Sunday shows this weekend? Sunday morning? What was it? Meet the Press, I think, with Tim Russert? Secretary, I'm paraphrasing now from memory. Russert says something to the effect of Secretary Powell, was there a connection between Saddam Hussein and 9/11 and Al Qaeda? And, you know, I'm telling you, there is a battle going on inside this administration. And if George Bush gets elected in November, Colin Powell is going to be toast. He's going to be out of there so fast it'll make his head spin. Because he fired a shot across their bow. You've got this last, just a couple of days ago. Was it yesterday? It was either yesterday or the day before. Don Rumsfeld, I believe it was yesterday, giving a speech in which he says, in which he's mixing up, he's putting Osama bin Laden and Saddam Hussein in the same sentence. Repeatedly. Now, I don't think it's senility. So anyhow, Tim Russert asked this just straightforward question. Colin Powell. Colin Powell says, no, there's no connection. Saddam Hussein had nothing to do with 9/11. Nothing to do with Al-Qaeda. Gee, what a surprise. I mean, it's only like something the rest of the world knew. But back to the original, where we started with this thing, the Associated Press now, finally the story comes out. And I encourage you to contact your local newspapers and say, you know, I'd like to see more about this. The story of Bush the flip-flopper. It's an article by Tom Raum, R-A-U-M. Both candidates often shift positions. He points out, while working relentlessly to portray Democratic Senator John Kerry as a flip-flopper, President Bush has his own history of changing his position. From reversals on steel tariffs and nation-building to reasons for invading Iraq. And then they actually give a list, and here's the list. This is from the Associated Press story. This is not, you know, some stuff off the Democratic website. This is just very straightforward. Right here, right out of the Associated Press. In 2000, Bush argued against new military entanglements and nation building. He's done both in Iraq. He opposed a Homeland Security Department, then he embraced it. Bush opposed creation of an independent 9/11 commission, then supported it. Bush first refused to speak to its members, then agreed only if Vice President Dick Cheney came with him and held his hand. Well, the held his hand part I added. Bush argued for free trade, then imposed 3-year tariff on steel imports in 2002, and then withdrew it after 21 months. Last month, he said he doubted the war on terror could be won. Then he reversed himself to say it could and would be won. A week after the 9/11 attacks, Bush said he wanted Osama bin Laden dead or alive. But he told reporters 6 months later, I truly am not concerned about him. He did not mention bin Laden once in his hour-long convention acceptance speech. On Meet the Press on February 6th, Bush says, I'm a war president. But in a July 20th speech in Iowa, he said, nobody wants to be the war president. I want to be the peace president. Make up your mind, George. Bush keeps revising his Iraq war rationale. I'm just reading from the Associated Press here. Make up your mind. I tossed that in. Bush needs to revise. He keeps revising his Iraq war rationale. Back to the story. The need to seize Saddam Hussein's weapons of mass destruction until none were found. Liberating the Iraqi people from a brutal dictator. Fighting terrorists in Iraq and not at home. Spreading democracy throughout the Middle East. Now he's on to version 6 here, folks. Now it's a safer America and a safer world. Yeah, right. He's making a much less safe America and less safe America and a world. Bush has changed his positions on again quoting the Associated Press, new clean air restrictions, protecting the Social Security surplus, tobacco subsidies, the level of assistance to help combat AIDS in Africa, campaign finance overhaul, and whether to negotiate with North Korean officials. Among other things, I might add. Wake up. You want to know the flip-flopper. And this is just in the last 3 years. I mean, for John Kerry's flip-flops, they're going back to things he said 27 years ago that he disagrees with today and saying, look at this, he's changed his mind. Give me a break. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. 18 minutes past the hour. Christopher in Santa Fe, New Mexico is on the line. Hey, Christopher, what's up?
I'd like to make a comment about having generals. as Secretaries of State.
Sure, go for it.
I think one of the best Secretaries of State we had was right after World War II. It was George C. Marshall. And he had a plan not only for winning the war, but winning the peace. And, you know, sometimes the best thing you can have is someone who's heard shots fired in anger and seen the death and destruction. And by God, maybe that's what we need in some ways. And I agree with you. I don't know what the heck's going on with Colin Powell. And I don't know what Karl Rove or whatever's done to him. But he's been there, he's smelled the smoke, and he's seen some death.
Yeah, well, he's a good soldier, and he's following instructions. And I agree with you about George Marshall, but George Marshall, keep in mind, played more than just the role of general in World War II. I mean, he was all over the place, and he knew these people, he knew the players, he'd participate. I mean, this is following World War II. That's a little different situation, I think, than most other times, and certainly than now. I'm not... As I said, you could argue to me that the selection of Colin Powell as Secretary of State was a good one, and I'd say, you know, it wasn't a terrible one. As I said, I think he should have Don Rumsfeld's job. If you want to have a Republican in there as head of the Defense Department, have a guy who has served in combat, as you said, who has served in combat. And I think that they should have had somebody in the State Department, you know, like Joe Wilson, for example. You know, somebody who was a career...
No, that, you're absolutely right.
Really understood it. Yeah.
Would have been a good call.
Yeah, and you read Wilson's book and you get it. That there is something, I mean, his book is brilliant, that there really is something to this diplomacy thing, and it's a complicated, complex affair, as it were. 20 minutes, thanks, Christopher, for the call. Great to hear from you.
Sure.
20 minutes past the hour, Tom Hartman here with you. Defending America from the conservative weapons of mass deception.
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is the small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service. Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Wakefield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do you know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dog, they don't work on commission. Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer, the new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack, and automatic security updates lock out viruses. That's speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers instead of sitting on hold with tech support.
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like the small dog who everybody makes room for, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service. Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com or at their showroom on Route 100 in Waitsfield.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
Visit iowapeace.com for books on justice and peace. The Last Liberal Outlaw is Mike Palasek's new novel. Chuck Gregory with BlueEar.com had this to say. Palasek is at his best when writing about small-town America. It's a place he clearly loves, even as he pokes fun at its quirks and reveals the sickness that lies just below the surface. It's a place he knows, and he shares his knowledge in delightfully original ways, even as he cries out for change. We haven't had a writer like Palasek since Kurt Vonnegut was at his peak. Mike is an Iowa author, former federal prisoner for peace, small-town newspaper reporter, seminarian, and nominee for the U.S. House of Representatives in the Iowa Democratic Party 2000 election. For more information and more about Mike's other novels, visit iowapeace.com. The revolution won't be televised, but you can read about it. The Last Liberal Outlaw, A New American Revolution, is happening in the heartland.
For more than 27 years, the progressive magazine In These Times has provided groundbreaking coverage of movements for social, environmental, and economic justice. Author and broadcast personality Studs Terkel calls In These Times his bi-weekly tonic. In These Times features award-winning reporting and analysis of national and international news. Find In These Times on your newsstand or visit us online at www.inthesetimes.com or call 1-800-827-0270. 1-800-827-0270.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. Hey, California, where is your tax money going? To Walmart, of course. A new study released by UC Berkeley reveals that the low wages paid at Walmart stores forces employees to accept about $86 million annually in public assistance programs. That includes $32 million annually in health-related service and $54 million per year in services such as food stamps and subsidized housing. Walmart employees in that state earn on average 31% less than workers in the retail sector as a whole.
Think you're not involved in your community? Think again. Spending your money with local businesses is more than an economic choice. It's a way you can have a say in the look and feel of your hometown. By creating a demand for local goods and services, we can ensure a place for the independent businesses that help give our communities character and keep them unique. The American Independent Business Alliance encourages you to get involved. Support your homegrown businesses. Find Amoeba online at amiba.net.
Are you tired of progressives spending all their energy on defensive struggles where victory simply maintains the status quo? We are too, and we're doing something about it. At ReclaimDemocracy.org, we're taking the initiative to revoke corporate power and restore citizen authority over corporations to enable genuine progress on the many issues that we all care about. Get involved. Visit us online at ReclaimDemocracy.org or call 406-582-1224.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
You're all invited, election year. Neighbor against neighbor, hope against fear. Look out, America, election year. Out at the ballot box, we'll knock your socks off. Victory's near. Election year.
And welcome back, Mark LeGrand there. From the People's Republic of Vermont, from where we are broadcasting. Tom Hartman here with you, 24 and a half minutes, 25 minutes after the hour. Democratic Vice Presidential candidate John Edwards on Sunday accused President Bush and Vice President Dick Cheney of misleading Americans. This in the St. Petersburg Times online, Tampa Bay, by implying a link between Saddam Hussein and the 9/11 terrorist attacks. Today, he said, Secretary of State Colin Powell made clear there is no connection between Saddam Hussein and the attacks on 9/11. See, he was talking about that Tim Russert interview, Meet the Press. From this day forward, this administration should never suggest there is, says John Edwards. So then, the next day or a few hours later, this from Reuters. Defense Secretary Donald Rumsfeld mixed up al-Qaeda leader Osama bin Laden and deposed Iraqi President Saddam Hussein twice in a speech on Friday about the war against terrorism. You think in a speech it's an accident? It was before the National Press Club. He says the leader of the opposition Northern Alliance, Massoud, lay dead. His murder ordered by Saddam Hussein, by Osama bin Laden, Taliban's co-conspirator. Subliminal advertising there. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. Tom in Ketchikan, Alaska. Boy, you're a ways away. Hey, Tom, just about the same latitude, though. Is winter coming?
Came this weekend. The weather set in and cloudy and overcast and cold.
Yeah, it's starting to get down to the 40s here in the mountains of Vermont. So
we've had one day like that so far, but it's a great summer, though, so yeah. We'll live with that memory for a while.
There you go. That's those of us who live in the northern climes. I mean, you're really in the northern climes. Anyhow, what's on your mind, Tom?
Well, very interested in, before the break, what you had ran down in regards from the Associated Press and the article and of all the waffling. I almost hate to say that because that seems to be the moniker that the RNC has put on when they refer to Kerry, but as you said, a 27-year record, and as compared to Bush's three-year. Point counterpoint during a debate, great idea. The first time that those words exit Bush's mouth, Kerry should be at the ready with just that list alone.
Yeah, he should
and
have it memorized.
I don't know how anyone could dispute that.
Yeah, he should have it memorized. He should, but the odds are, that Bush won't use the phrase flip-flop in a. See, what he's going to do in the debate is he's going to try and stand above the fray, look presidential, because he's the incumbent. He's trying to project that. And then he lets his campaign, basically, his ads, do the dirty work, or people like Swift Boat Veterans, or like this Republican that we're going to have on in a few minutes, guys like this who are going to go out and say outrageous things. Like, oh, Kerry, he's a war criminal. He was killing people in Vietnam. How dare he run for president? That's what they're going to do.
Well, we can only hope that Bush will be Bush and be able to step in it at the right time, and Kerry can take advantage of it.
Well, frankly, I'm a little concerned about that, because Bush being Bush beat Ann Richards in the debates in Texas and beat her badly. And I mean, that turned the election to Bush's favor. And Ann Richards is no newcomer to politics, and she's very articulate and very fast on her feet. And he just absolutely stole it from her. And many people suggest that he beat Al Gore in the debates. I watched all three of those debates, and however many there were, and I never got the sense that Al Gore had lost. But then, you know, I am looking through the filter of my own biases.
Right.
But, you know, I think apparently middle America thought Gore came off, you know, wooden, and Bush came off human. And if he does that again with Kerry, it's not going to be a good thing.
Yeah, well, I think, and to that degree, I think Gore didn't help Gore oftentimes as well. But they have some time between now and the first one, and I'm hoping that he's well-schooled, Kerry, and holds his own against Bush. If anything, we know that they're predictable, and if we know what the other side's game is, then I think that's half the journey. Presentation is the other.
There you go. I agree. Tom, thanks for calling from Ketchikan, Alaska. Great to hear from you. I appreciate it.
Thank you, Tom.
Thank you. 29 minutes past the hour. It's the Tom Hartman radio program. A pill that will help you escape the Matrix.
There's a positive focus on a condition that affects millions. Read The Edison Gene, ADHD and the Gift of the Hunter Child by Tom Hartman, best-selling author of Attention Deficit Disorder, A Different Perception. John Rady, author of User's Guide to the Brain, says this about the Edison Gene.
Once again, with tireless scholarship and a bit of poetry, Tom Hartman helps take us to the edge of knowing ourselves, our brains, and our world.
The Edison Gene, available in bookstores everywhere.
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program. This is the Democracy Zone with Tom Hartman.
Now you've got your wars, but does it kind of make you think? With the nation on the brink, there's a trouble in the W. Was playing hide and seek, what were you doing, Dark South?
Were you just hanging out?
What
was it really all about?
When the danger was gone, you came out acting strong. Now you got all of America captain to your song, yeah.
Did it with AOL Time Warner. John Ashcroft did it with Microsoft and Monsanto. Interior Secretary Gail Norton did it with BP Amoco. Condoleezza Rice did it with Chevron. Ooh, Donald Rumsfeld did it with Big Boy Sears, Kellogg, and Allstate.
Of course the Bush administration is in bed with its corporate donors.
George Bush did it with Goldman Sachs, Citigroup, and Enron.
Did you think they were giving it away?
Paid for by BillionaireForBush.com.
And welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. We had a bit of a burp in our automation system, so some of our affiliates may be coming back in just a moment. My apologies for that. Anyway, Don Rumsfeld mixing up Al-Qaeda and Osama bin Laden. Some suggest that what is going on here with Rumsfeld using, for example, Rumsfeld, Saddam Hussein, if he's alive, is spending a whole lot of time trying not to get caught, and we've seen him on video since 2001. Say what? Saddam Hussein or Osama bin Laden? Which is it? Is it Saddam? Is it Osama? I mean, you know, which, what, where, how, who? Who knows? Who knows? I mean, this massive confusion here on the part of Saddam Hussein. I would suggest that number one, they have been embedding this super psychological message into their machine so long, and frankly so effectively, embedding this message that Saddam Hussein had something to do with 9/11. That nearly 40% of Americans actually believe this lie, and that Don Rumsfeld perhaps is starting to believe it, in as much as he's saying things. Somebody asked him a question about Osama bin Laden, and he answers by saying Saddam Hussein, if he's alive, is spending a whole lot of time trying not to get caught. And Saddam Hussein, I'm sorry, is in jail. I don't think this is early senility. Yeah, Don Rumsfeld is in his 70s, but I think his mind is pretty sharp. I think that maybe they're actually starting to believe their own big lie. Could it be? Entirely possible. In fact, it goes on. Our mislead of the day, Cheney misleads on Iraq al-Qaeda connection, displaying a brazen disregard for the facts. Vice President Cheney told an audience in Cincinnati Thursday that Iraq had provided safe harbor and sanctuary for al-Qaeda. There's no evidence to support Cheney's claims. The 9/11 Commission, which spends months exhaustively studying the issue, concluded there was, quote, no collaborative relationship between Iraq and al-Qaeda. No collaborative relationship? None whatsoever, says the 9/11 Commission. After the release of the report, Cheney claimed there was overwhelming evidence of a relationship between al-Qaeda and Iraq, and that he had, quote, probably, end quote, seen evidence that was not shared with the commission. So the commission says, okay, let's see it. Well, we don't have any. Well, I'm sorry, folks, we don't. Anyhow, after investigating the matter, the 9/11 Commission found, and I quote, it had access to the same information the vice president has seen regarding contacts between al-Qaeda and Iraq prior to the 9/11 attacks, end quote. The commission also reaffirmed its position that it had not discovered a, quote, collaborative cooperation between al-Qaeda and Iraq. But they would like you to think so. And you say, once again, we got John Edwards going on TV saying, okay, on Meet the Press, Colin Powell goes on TV and says, no collaborative relationship, no relationship, nothing, Saddam Hussein had nothing to do with 9/11. And hours later, Dick Cheney's out there going, well, or Don Rumsfeld, rather, is out there going, well, that nasty guy. We'll see. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. And is that our guest on line three there? Maybe not. We'll find out. Because I can't punch up the line when Ira's on it. Okay, Ira, 1-866-889-8894. Is that Richard Engel? No.
Yes, this is Richard Engel.
Hey, Richard, Tom Hartman here. You are the Republican wing of the Republican Party, the National Federation of Republican Assemblies.
Well, the NFRA is known as the Republican wing of the Republican Party. President Ronald Reagan called the Republican Assemblies the conscience of the Republican Party.
And that's you guys.
Yeah, well, that's us.
Yeah, okay. If you really, and you're calling John Kerry a war criminal.
Well, not exactly, no. I wrote an article saying John Kerry is a war criminal. But actually, that article, I cast doubts on his claim, his self-accusation of being a war criminal.
I've got, I've got it right in front of me here. John Kerry is a self-confessed war criminal, exclamation point.
Yes, he is a self-confessed war criminal. He was honorably discharged because the military found absolutely no evidence of his claim other than his own claim.
If you really think this is important, if you really believe that this is important, then why are you supporting a guy who is a rich, spoiled drunk and a hypocrite who supported a war he was unwilling to fight, the Vietnam War?
Well, I don't know why you say that. All I'm saying is that...
Well, are you trying to tell me that the George Bush wasn't a drunk during the Vietnam War?
I'm trying to tell you that my article and my comments have to do with the fact that John Kerry is unfit for public office, that he either is the war criminal he claims to be, or he's a liar and doesn't deserve to be in any public office whatsoever because he not only lied about himself, but about the others who did honorably serve in our armed forces.
You know, I think I'm just astounded. Joe Welch comes to mind. Have you no sense of decency, sir? Come on. Richard, can't you acknowledge the fact that to volunteer to defend your country at time of war takes courage, and it takes even more courage to volunteer to stand up not just for your country but also to your country when you believe that they're doing wrong?
There were plenty of Nazi war criminals who volunteered to serve their country. I don't consider that correct.
And then who later stood up while the Nazis were still in power and said, this administration is wrong?
I'm sorry?
And then who later stood up while the Nazis were in power and said, what we are doing is wrong? Name one.
Well, I guess the question goes to whether those men who honorably served our nation, the United States of America, were indeed war criminals for having done that service, or if they were not. And I say that those who honorably served were not, and John Kerry said that they were, and he was including himself among them.
Richard, I'm assuming you're not an idiot. You know, I'm assuming that maybe you have no shame, but I'm assuming that you're at least you have a functioning intellect. John Kerry was not suggesting that everybody in Vietnam was a war criminal, as you write here. I mean, you know that.
He was suggesting that those he served with were. He said that.
Here's exactly what he said.
Months ago in Detroit.
Let's start over again.
Months ago in Detroit.
Now, this is the part that you got that the Swift Boat bozos leave out of their ads.
Months ago in Detroit, we had an investigation at which over 150 honorably discharged and many very highly decorated veterans testified to war crimes committed in Southeast Asia.
Now, do you recall any grunts being prosecuted at Nuremberg?
I don't recall Nuremberg. I'm a little too young for that.
You haven't read history,
though. That doesn't matter. I'm not calling for John Kerry to be prosecuted. I actually cast doubt on his claim, his self-accusation of being a war criminal. I suggest that he was making that false claim about himself and those he served with, and that isn't the tape that I would have addressed. I would address the one where he said that
I participated in three fire zones.
All the others that he served with there had committed these atrocities, that he had participated in those atrocities. And I am paraphrasing to some degree, I'll admit. But that's the one I would go to.
Yeah, he said he had participated in free fire zones. You don't think that free fire zones are a war crime? Or you think they are? Which is it?
I just know.
Well, here's the question. No, let's deal with the reality. If we know that not only John Kerry and other people, come on, Richard, we know that either
if he was lying about it, then he doesn't deserve to serve in any public office because he was lying not only about himself but those he served with, and if he was telling the truth about it, then he belongs in jail.
No, the way it works.
Himself in that corner.
The way it works.
The way,
Richard. Come on, Richard. Use your intellect. The way it works is the people who order the war. Lieutenant Calley was the guy who got prosecuted, not the people who worked under him. At the Nuremberg trials, it was the leaders of the Nazis who got prosecuted. This was the whole point of what John Kerry was putting forth in the Winter Soldier hearings and in his later comments, was that the criminals were Richard Nixon and his buddies who were ordering this, and Lyndon Johnson before that, if you want to be completely nonpartisan about this, that this was a war that was wrong, and that when soldiers were fighting and it was being fought in ways that were wrong, and are you denying that?
I deny that the war was wrong.
You think that we really were attacked at the Gulf of Tonkin?
The Cold War was an appropriate battle for us to be involved in. I deny that war was wrong.
So you think we really were attacked at the Gulf of Tonkin?
I think that it was appropriate to back up and support our ally in South Vietnam, and it was appropriate to hold the line on communism. I think we should have gone beyond holding the line. I think that the efforts of Congress and, to some degree, the presidents, both Nixon and Johnson, as you mentioned, worked to limit the war rather than to outright win it.
See, I would say that. Excuse me, I just got distracted here.
this is the big lie. I mean, this you agree then with Lyndon Johnson that we should have that he should have lied to the American people about the Gulf of, about the attack against the our ship in the Gulf of Tonkin.
Then
do you think that Congress ever would have voted?
We had an ally in South Vietnam, and it was appropriate for us to support that ally.
But Congress was not going to vote to do that.
We had growth in communism, and it was appropriate for us to fight that growth of communist world dominance.
And it worked really well, didn't it?
What was inappropriate was going in without a deliberate strategy for victory.
Like we have in Iraq.
I think we've got a strategy for victory in Iraq.
Oh, yeah? What is it?
Well, we've done a whole lot better in Iraq and had a whole lot less losses, and we've got a...
We just lost two cities in the last 3 weeks.
...than we ever had in Vietnam.
We just lost two cities in 2 weeks. We're doing a whole lot better. This sure looks to me like 1968.
Yeah, we lost the whole country in Vietnam and a whole lot more people than we've lost in Iraq.
Well, it took us a little longer.
In the entire war on terror thus far, we've lost less soldiers than were lost on the day that started when they attacked us in 9/11.
I'm sorry, say that again.
The total number of deaths from the attack of 9/11 is still greater than the total number of deaths in prosecuting this war.
In other words, Iraqis who die don't count. They're not human.
The total number of deaths the United States suffered.
Okay,
in other words, if
people in other countries die, that doesn't count.
That doesn't.
Well, if civilians
sure
in Iraq
they,
die,
sure
that doesn't
they count.
Count
them.
American officials
are obliged to uphold the.
Okay, so we got a situation here where we get attacked by Japan, and we say, okay, we've been attacked by Japan. We're going to declare war on Brazil.
We didn't declare war on Brazil.
No, we declared war on Iraq, which had nothing to do with attacking us.
They were indeed involved with Al Qaeda. They were a terror sponsor. They aren't anymore.
Oh, come on. Colin Powell on Meet the Press just 2 days ago said Saddam Hussein and Iraq had absolutely nothing to do with 9/11. Are you telling me that our Secretary of State is a liar?
I didn't. No, you took my words.
Then are you the liar?
I said they were involved in Al-Qaeda, and they were a sponsor of terror.
Al-Qaeda hated them. You know, do you realize that Osama bin Laden went back to Saudi Arabia after he finished throwing the Soviets out of Afghanistan with our help? I mean, we helped create the Mujahideen and fund him. And then he goes back to Saudi Arabia, and the first thing he does is he offers to his own government to push back against Saddam Hussein, who is leaning up against their border. He volunteered the Mujahideen to fight on behalf of Saudi Arabia against Saddam Hussein because he hated Saddam Hussein. And Saudi Arabia said, no, we're going to let the Americans do that. And that to this day, I mean, in 1998 in his fatwa, he refers to that incident.
Yep. So?
So you're saying that this guy is Saddam's good buddy when he wanted to murder him?
He doesn't have good buddies. The enemy of my enemy is my friend. That's a common Muslim concept. They will be friendly with the
Muslim concept.
You mean like
Musharraf, who's a military dictator, a general, a tyrant, and a murderer who took over Pakistan, overthrew a democratic. He's the enemy of the. Come on, Machiavelli is guaranteed to create. Machiavelli in politics is guaranteed to create disaster. Can't you see that?
Okay, doesn't change the facts that we live with.
The facts that we live with, that we invaded a country that had no weapons of mass destruction, that represented no threat to us.
They didn't have as many weapons of mass destruction as were purported.
They didn't have as many weapons of mass destruction as 90 countries on Earth.
So, the reasoning, the logic for going to Iraq is they were indeed involved as a terror sponsor. They were indeed involved with Al-Qaeda.
Wait a second. Okay. Are you talking about the $25,000? You're talking about...
When you violate a ceasefire agreement in a declared war, which we had 10 years previous with Iraq, never had a peace treaty, therefore the war continued. It was only under ceasefire. When you violate the terms of a ceasefire agreement, fire resumes.
Okay, so the you're saying we went to war with Iraq because they violated the United Nations resolutions, basically. That's the bottom line.
They violated their ceasefire agreement. Fire resumes.
How did they violate
it? They had other reasons to engage them. and that included the fact that they were indeed a sponsor of terror, they were indeed involved with Al-Qaeda, and we needed to take them out for our security and our safety.
Oh, this is such nonsense. You're participating in the big lie here, Richard, and I don't understand why you would do that, why you would participate in something that is so harmful to the United States.
I'm not.
Do you consider yourself a patriot or a traitor?
You're deceived. You're full of baloney.
No, I'm not. I mean,
did they or did they not violate the ceasefire agreement? They did.
Well, tell me when.
Were they not involved in Al-Qaeda? They were. Were they involved in 9/11? Not to our knowledge.
But, you know, the bottom line is that we don't start wars, we end them. We attack countries that attack us. Saddam Hussein had, we had bombed his Air Force into smithereens. He had nothing. We had weapons inspectors over there looking around. Hans Blix is saying, okay, you know where there's weapons? Tell me, I'll go find them.
Afghanistan
is a whole different thing.
Chaos. Afghanistan had an environment in which Al-Qaeda could
Afghanistan
grow.
Afghanistan had Osama bin Laden.
And blow up our cities.
Yeah, Afghanistan had Osama
Similarly,
bin Laden.
Iraq had that.
Did not have Osama bin Laden.
They did have Al-Qaeda.
They did not have Al-Qaeda. They had one guy in Baghdad who was recovering from a wound who, you know, you can't even demonstrate that Saddam knew he was there. And they had a camp up in the north that was near the Pakistani border that was in Kurdistan that was under our protection. Saddam would have taken them out if he could have, but he couldn't get up there.
Neither you nor I were there. The 9/11 Commission made clear ties between Iraq and Al-Qaeda. They did not make ties between Iraq and 9/11 specifically, but they did make clear ties between Iraq and 9/11. The argument is well placed that we should have gone to Iraq, and it did save American lives to do so.
Okay. Richard Engel, thank you for being with us. Richard Engel is with... You got a website you want to plug, Richard?
The National Federation of Republican Assemblies website is GOPwing.com, or the Republican Wing, GOP Granville Party, Wing.com.
Great, thanks.
GOPWING.
Got it. Thanks, Richard. Tom Hartman here with you.
This is Vivionik Raskin. I'm the president and founder of the Organic Wine Company. What happened when you, Thomas, gave us a plug, the phone started ringing. The first person said, whatever it is that you're selling, I want to buy it. And for the next few hours, the phone rang nonstop. The people who listen to your program are what they call in the business my target audience, people who are conscious and responsible and try to do the right thing and try to think for themselves. I would encourage anyone to advertise on the Thomas Hartman Show absolutely without question, whether that be on the national level or the local level, and you will absolutely get results. The way you can learn more about our imported organically grown wines from France is by calling us. The phone number is 1-888-ECO-WINE, or you can visit our site at www.ecowine.com.
Now, it's time for This Billionaire Moment.
Give a small child a knife, and the poor tyke is likely to chop off a finger. But in the hands of a master chef, that knife is a tool for creating a sumptuous feast. It's the same thing with money. Give money to poor people, and they'll probably squander it on foolish indulgences like aluminum siding or medicine or food. But if you put money in our hands, in the hands of people who have been around money all our lives, we're going to build empires and buy elections and develop weapon systems and suppress dissent and spread the blessing that is the essence of what America is all about. Unbridled corporate freedom all over the world. I'm Zena Fogue for This Billionaire Moment.
This Billionaire Moment is brought to you by BillionairesForBush.com.
Here come the billionaires!
On September 17th, I'll be broadcasting live on WTKG AM 1230 in Grand Rapids at the Celebration Cinema, noon to 3 p.m. at the corner of Knapp and East Beltline. Drop by early at 11 a.m. in the Wave Room for a get-together, then listen to the show. At 4 p.m. after the show, I'll be at Schuller Bookstore on 28th Street for a book signing. For more information, call 616-776-5541. That's 616-776-5541.
Can you imagine a world in which all kids live healthy, safe, productive, and prosperous lives? Well, that world is within our grasp, and there's a way to reach it. It's called Ecolonomics. And to learn more, just pull up DennisWeaverNow.com and learn how to get a free report of our Ecolonomics educational program and how together we can build a world of prosperity without pollution. DennisWeaverNow.com. DennisWeaverNow.com. DennisWeaverNow.com.
Tiny pieces of plastic cover much of the oceans, and they fill the stomachs of some animals that live there. I'm Richard Hoops for Earthwatch Radio. A lot of plastic trash ends up floating in the oceans, and it slowly breaks down into tiny fragments that some animals eat by mistake. The results can range from indigestion to poisoning. Charles Moore studies the effects of plastic in the oceans and where it's concentrated. Moore founded the Alcalita Marine Research Foundation in California to do this kind of research. In some places at sea, Moore says there is more plastic than there is natural food. Moore says this is a huge problem for marine animals. Plastic comes in virtually any shape and color, and a lot of it looks like natural food to hungry animals.
Just about any food you can imagine has a plastic mimic. So all kinds of marine animals are eating plastic.
Moore says animals that eat the plastic sometimes end up with digestion problems. In addition, they can become weak since they filled their stomachs with junk that gives them no energy. He says the worst problem is that the plastic can lead to poisoning.
Plastic is a sponge for oily pollutants, DDTs, PCBs. These bits of plastic are catching these pollutants and moving them into animals. So it's sort of like where a fish wouldn't necessarily have eaten a pollutant, if you put it on a piece of plastic that looks like food and then the fish will eat it, you're creating a vector for transmitting pollutants in the ocean.
Moore says toxins from the tiniest scraps of plastic can slowly move up the food chain. That's because pollutants that stick to the plastic accumulate in the tissues of animals, and those body burdens are passed on as smaller animals are eaten by larger ones. Earthwatch Radio is a service of the Sea Grant Program and the Gaylord Nelson Institute at the University of Wisconsin.
Is the Tom Hartman Program.
And welcome back. You know, sometimes I feel like
I can't take it anymore.
Yeah, I can't take it anymore. And what I really wanted to say to the Richard Republican guy.
You want answers? I think I'm entitled.
You want answers?
I want the truth. You can't handle the truth.
Yeah, 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. We've only got a couple minutes in this segment. Let's take some quick calls here. Jared in Collegeville, Pennsylvania. Hey, Jared, what's up?
Hey, Tom. How you doing?
Great.
I'd like to say you debated that gentleman masterfully.
Thank you.
And I just wanted to bring up the statistics he had about how many Americans died in the war so far. I don't think that included all the contractors over there or the quote-unquote coalition of the willing.
Yeah, good point. But still, it was less than have died in the towers. But does that mean we should just like wait around until we've got 3,000 dead soldiers? I mean, give me a break. That kind of logic is absolutely insane. Thanks for pointing that out, Jared. I appreciate it. Good on you. 1-866-889-8894. Mark in Chicago. Hey, Mark, what's up?
Hey, Tom. Hey, you know, the logic that they use is that United States is harboring terrorists also. If
and weapons of mass destruction.
Passes through a country and they're harboring, United States possesses terrorists also.
Yeah. It's sick, it's twisted, it's insane. It's the big lie. These are the same rationales that Hitler used to invade Czechoslovakia and Poland,
right,
particularly Poland. And that was the thing that really started World War II. It's the exact same preemptive. They're after us. We've got to get them first when there's no threat there. And he knew it. And after the war, there was actually a commission that looked into it in Germany and said, yeah, sure enough, there was no threat there. Anyhow, good point, Mark. I appreciate it. Thanks for the call. 1-866-889-8894. Chris in New Mexico, you'll have the final word. We got about 30 seconds here. Hey, Chris.
Hey, Tom, you know, you just ran into something that I've run into the past 3 years over and over again, which is trying to have a conversation with the polar ice cap. You know, you tell them the truth, and they simply say, like a three-year-old, that's not the truth.
Yeah, blue is blue. No, it's red. No, it's blue. Yes, you, no, it's red.
Yes, it is. No, it's not. Yes, it is. No, it's not. Yes, it's ridiculous. It's, how can they get away with this?
Well, they're doing it. And the way that the big lie works, and you know, and Hitler was the master of this, but I'm telling you, the Bush administration, Karl Rove, has fine-tuned this into an art form, and you got guys like this out there. The way the big lie works is you say something totally outrageous and repeat it over and over and over again, and pretty soon, at first people go, what? That couldn't be. And pretty soon people are going, oh, yeah, falling dominoes. That makes sense. Oh, yeah, the terrorists. Oh, weapons of mass. Oh, yeah, that makes, you know, and boom, you've got it. John Kerry's a war criminal. Yeah, if, you know, you tell the lie loud enough and often enough, and you will find people who believe it. Absolutely.
Sure.
Thanks, Chris. Thanks for the call. Good to hear from you. It's the Tom Hartman radio program, Integrity and Passion in Broadcasting Truth.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
The following phone call was not recorded on February 30th, 2004.
Thank you for calling about DirecTV. My name is Lynn. How can I help you?
Thank you, sir. Thank goodness you're there. You've got to help me. My cable company is raising their rates again. I don't know what I'm going to do.
It's okay, ma'am. I'm here to help. I'm glad you called.
They're taking away our favorite channels and charging more. It's just wrong.
Ma'am, I get that all the time. Let me help you right away. Would you like to get over 125 channels of your favorite programming for only $39.99?
Will I still be able to get my local channels?
Absolutely. And because you called American Satellite right now, you can get up to a four-room DirecTV system for free and free professional installation for all new customers with an annual programming commitment.
Oh, thank you. My husband, Nick, is going to be so happy.
Call American Satellite at 1-800-505-1542. That's 800-505-1542. Call now and ask how you can get total choice for only $29.99 a month for the first 6 months. A $60 value. 800-505-1542. At $4.99 a month per second in each additional receiver. Offer ends July 17, 2000.
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Sarah Turner.
Employees of United Parcel Service filed a lawsuit on Monday against the world's largest package delivery company. The suit alleges violations of the Americans with Disabilities Act and claims that UPS has refused to reinstate permanently disabled employees in positions that would accommodate their medical restrictions. The suit also alleges that the company required employees returning to work following a medical leave of absence to provide a full medical release before they were permitted to work. It also says that the company refuses to meet with disabled employees to determine the extent of their disabilities. Filed in a federal court in Pittsburgh, if successful, the suit could cost the company millions of dollars and affect tens of thousands of employees.
A report released on Monday by the U.S. Commerce Department included the first new economic indicator from the U.S. Census Bureau in nearly 40 years. The new services indicator was created to more accurately gauge how service industries contribute to U.S. economic statistics. Frederick Knickerbocker, Associate Director for Economic Programs, Bureau of the Census, says survey data will be gathered quarterly now instead of annually.
If you add up all the services sectors, they're about $7.8 trillion. They are a gigantic piece of the American economy. They are the largest piece of the American economy. And so it's very important that we can begin to track quarter by quarter what's happening to sales, to revenues, the level of activity in these sectors. We're laying down the baseline to really begin to track these things on a quarterly basis.
Knickerbocker added these new numbers show revenues increased by 5.4% in key U.S. service industries.
Following in the footsteps of United Airlines, U.S. Airways has asked a judge for permission to skip a major pension payment due this week. The airline filed for bankruptcy for the second time in 2 years on Sunday, and it announced on Monday that it would not be able to make a payment to cover the pensions of machinists and flight attendants. The airline also said it's considering terminating those plans altogether. In addition, Delta Airlines said this weekend that it may file for bankruptcy if pilots continue to retire early. Pilots, concerned that the flagging airline may have to file for bankruptcy anyway, are choosing to retire early and take a lump sum payment of their pensions. Here's today's Dow Bob Report. The information technology market continues to weaken in the United States. A new poll of 500 hiring managers by the Information Technology Association of America reveals that 270,000 fewer IT workers will be hired this year than in 2003. A Department of Labor report released last month echoes the finding. Analysis of the report by Information Week revealed that the number of employed IT professionals has decreased by nearly 7% in the past 3 years, and IT unemployment has nearly doubled.
You've been listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
I've been a lifelong Republican since I was old enough to vote, and I thought that Bush would be a fiscally conservative individual. I feel betrayed. I don't believe that a government should be engaging in reckless spending, recklessly stretching the military to the point of breaking, recklessly trying to stretch, alter, and amend the Constitution, which this country was based on. And that's why I'm going to vote for John Kerry.
Move On PAC is responsible for the content of this advertisement.
If you think that the Bushites had no post-war plan for what they would do in Iraq after our military ousted Saddam, think again. You can see their plan in the extremist economic policies that were quietly and autocratically imposed on the Iraqi people during the reign of L. Paul Bremer III, who was our occupying czar there. While America's media establishment has been focused on the raging war by Iraqi insurgents and by the Bushites' attempt to enthrone a puppet government there, the neocon laissez-faire zealots in the administration have been gleefully using this ravaged country as their own ideological playground. For years, these Ayn Randian theorists have longed to create their utopia of a corporate state, and they've used the IMF, World Bank, WTO, and other monkey wrenches to try to implement their theories in Latin America and elsewhere. But they've never had an entire economy at their disposal, until they grabbed Iraq. While Baghdad was burning, Bremer arrived. Rather than putting out the fires, he used them as a distraction to issue decrees that instantly opened up Iraq to a total corporate takeover. For example, his decrees open up all of that nation's public assets to foreign corporate ownership, and they allow 100% of the country's industries, from banking to food, to be owned by foreigners. Also, Bremer ruled that 100% of the profits that foreign investors make in Iraq can now be hauled out of the country. There's no requirement that any of these profits be reinvested there, nor that the investors have to pay even a dime in taxes on the profits they haul away. This isn't liberation, as the Bushites call their Iraqi adventure. It's legalized looting and is fueling the continuing anger and armed resistance by the Iraqi people, who are determined not to have their nation looted. This is Jim Hightower saying, to get this full story, see Naomi Klein's explosive article in Harper's Magazine. You can read it at harpers.org.
38%.
46%.
42%.
I cut my payments in half.
How much can you cut your monthly student loan payments by refinancing with College Loan Corporation? To find out, just call 1-800-2-COLLEGE. You'll quickly be connected to an expert loan consultant who will answer your questions and tell you how you can cut your monthly payment by up to 50% by refinancing your federal student loans at rates as low as 2.63%. 1-800-2-COLLEGE. It's the smartest call you can make.
Hello from the road, folks. You know, the only thing better than a twofer is a threefer. That's why this fall I'm staying at Econo Lodge and Roadway Inn Hotels. See, I get triple Southwest Airlines Rapid Rewards credit every time, so I earn flights three times faster. Call 800-4-CHOICE or visit choicehotels.com. We'll see you there.
Offer good for qualifying stays in the U.S. before November 30th, 2004. For details, visit choicehotels.com. Triple credit means 1.5 credits instead of the standard 0.5.
Calling for a rapid and radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded, here's Tom Hartman.
All right, welcome back, my friends. 7 minutes past the hour, Tom Hartman here with you. Hardball begins. Dirty pool, perhaps, would be a better and more accurate explanation. By the way, our program, you can find the chat room Live chat room, live interactive chat room, one at TomHartman.com, www.TomHartman.com. It is officially spelled T-H-O-M, Hartman with two N's, but you can spell it any way you want and get there. Yeah, assuming you're at least semi-literate. And you can drop into the chat room. Fascinating conversations. And, of course, our telephone number, 1-866-889-8894, if you would like to call in. Now back to the dirty pool here. GOP's leaders should denounce this from a Minnesota local, I believe this is a Minnesota television station, KARE, Channel 11. GOP leader, there's an article. GOP leader should denounce a state lawmaker who urged Republicans to disrupt a campaign event by supporters of presidential candidate John Kerry. You get this? Representative Bill Kiesel, congressman from Minnesota, had sent to Olmsted County Republicans in Minnesota an email urging them to attend an event in Rochester, Minnesota on Friday featuring singer Carole King and the group Minnesota Women for John Kerry. He said in his email, quote, "If anyone can go and harass, it would be appreciated." Signed, Bill. How sick does it get? Well, it gets even worse. Lynn Gobel, or Goebel, I mean, G-O-B-B-E-L-L, probably Goebel. "Never imagined the cost of a John Kerry, John Edwards bumper sticker could run so high," writes Clyde Stansel, daily staff writer for the Decatur Daily News, Decatur, Illinois, I'm assuming. She shows up for work, and her boss, a bozo by the name of Phil Gaddis, who owns a company, EnviroMate, E-N-V-I-R-O-M-A-T-E, a cellulose insulation company in Moulton, Illinois, fires her for having a Kerry Edwards bumper sticker on her car. She says, "We were going back to work from break, and my manager told me that Phil," he's the guy who owns the place, "said to remove the sticker off my car or I was fired," she said. "I told him Phil couldn't tell me who to vote for. He said, you go tell him." She went into Phil Gaddis' office, knocked on the door, and entered on his orders. Phil and another man who works there were there, she said. "I asked him if he said that I should remove the sticker, and he said, yes, I did. I told him he couldn't tell me who to vote for. When I told him that, he told me, I own this place. I've been telling you for 2 years, folks, the conservative agenda is feudalism. Ownership of the masses, of the serfs, by the wealthy and powerful. The elite Republicans believe if you work for them, they own you. Here it is writ large. When I told him that," she says, "he told me, I own this place. I told him he still couldn't tell me who to vote for." Goebel says Gaddis told her, "Get out of here. I asked him if I was fired. He told me he was thinking about it," she said. "I said, well, am I fired?" He hollered and said, "Get out of here and shut the door." She said her manager was standing in another room, and she asked him if that meant for her to go back to work or to go home. The manager told her to go to work, but he came back a few minutes later and said, "I guess you're fired. You could either work for him or for John Kerry." This is why Americans fought and died to have labor unions. Actually, it goes beyond that. This is why Americans for 200 years fought and died to have the right to free speech. This is not a feudal country anymore. Yes, I know the Republicans, the cons, want to take it in that direction as fast as possible, but it's not a feudal country. It is a constitutionally limited democratic republic. Where you and I, we the people, hold the rights. And any kind of institution, including the institution of an employer, of a business, have only privileges, and those privileges get to be defined by we the people. And we have already said, we said in 1789 when the Constitution was ratified, 1787 when it was written, 1789 when it was ratified, we said free speech is a right. No one's going to take it away. Within limits, of course. But political speech, this is, okay, you can call in and say, okay, listen, I've got a job, and if I walk up to one of my the customers of my business and tell him that he could go bleep himself like Dick Cheney did, I'll get fired. So what happened to my free speech? You're right. There is a contract between employer and employee. But it has to do with how you do your job, not the bumper sticker on your car. To fire somebody for a Kerry Edwards sticker on their car is, I'm sorry, over the line. And this guy, Phil Gaddis, who owns this company, Enviromate, in Illinois, in Moulton, Illinois, I'm sure they're in the phone book, is, in my opinion, at the very least, a traitor to the basic principles on which this nation was founded. Phil, if you got any courage at all, call me up and take me on. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. Rick in Grand Rapids, Michigan on the line. Hey, Rick, what's up?
Hey, Tom, how you doing?
I'm great, but I'll get better.
Good.
How about you?
Well, the first thing I'd like to say is it's time to get Jeffrey Feiger on that job. He can put that guy on his knees in about 2 seconds.
Jeffrey Feiger, who's that?
He's a lawyer out of Michigan. He ran for governor here a couple years back.
Oh, yeah, okay.
And he doesn't take any prisoners, so
yeah.
He'd be the guy to get on that.
Yeah, well, in the article, she says that she thought about getting a lawyer and then just decided to get another job. But I think she should nail this guy's butt to the wall. I mean, you know,
she should do that first, then get another job.
Yeah.
I was watching what's going on, and how long do you think it's going to be before Jeb Bush caves into God and says, I did cheat on the voting 4 years ago, God keeps sending hurricanes his way.
It sure does seem like there's some kind of message. I'll tell you what the message is that God is trying to send us. And you know, you take this any way you want. The message that God is trying to send us is, global warming is real! It causes hurricanes to be worse!
Also that Jeb Bush has sinned.
Yeah. Well, I'm not sure that God cares about politics. At least the God that I believe is out there, I'm not sure that he really cares about politics. But I do think that the fate of the planet is of some consequence to it. At least all sentient life on Earth.
Exactly. Now that dickhead that called in, was he a veteran?
Which guy? Are you talking about
Richard.
Oh, Richard. I didn't ask him. I should have.
You should, because most of the time those morons aren't even veterans. That's what makes me mad.
Well,
I'm a veteran of the Vietnam War, and I think, you know, Kerry has a lot of courage to do what he did on both sides of the issue.
Yeah, I just don't know. I mean, I could speculate, but it wouldn't be fair. He's not here to defend himself.
Yeah, but you should at least ask him when they start spitting and sputtering like that.
Yeah, but see, being a veteran, I mean, you know, I honor people who are veterans, particularly those who served in Vietnam and Korea in World War II, who served in combat. I mean, that is... You know, I've been in the middle of wars, not as a combatant, but as a worker for an international relief organization. I was in Africa in the middle of the war for liberation of Uganda. And it's one damn scary thing, I'll tell you. When there's bullets flying around, when you see people that you know get hit with a bullet and die, I mean, it completely changes your world. You experience emotions you didn't even know you had.
Well, you know what they say. War is the final destination of hatred.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. So, I want to say, you know, I honor anybody who, you know, as the original point that I keep making on this show, that to stand up for your country requires incredible courage, especially during time of war. And it requires even more courage, especially during time of war, to stand up to your country when you think what it's doing is wrong. And John Kerry did both, and George Bush did neither.
Exactly.
Neither.
And I was listening to Against All Enemies, and I think everybody should be... held accountable to listen or read that book.
Yeah.
As far as what really happened.
Yeah.
And how they knew about those planes being used as weapons way before those things ever happened.
Well, gee, I mean, you know, it was only Condoleezza Rice who told us that on August 6th, George W. Bush got a memo that was headlined "Osama bin Laden determined to strike inside the United States." At that point, Dick Cheney had been in charge of the counterterrorism task force ever since January. This was August. Had he ever met? No, they'd been too busy having their oil task force meetings with Kenny Lay. It's nuts. Rick, thanks for the call. I appreciate it. Good to hear from you. 17 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman here, 1-866-889-8894. Telephone number. Jeff in Santa Fe, New Mexico on the line. Hey, Jeff, what's up?
Hey, Tom, how's it going?
Great.
Sounds like you're pretty charged up.
Yeah, I had too much coffee this morning.
Listen, we've got down on the corner every Friday at one of the main intersections, we get protesters every Friday. And there's one guy that holds up a sign that says he'll pay $1,000 to anybody that can prove George Bush lied.
Okay.
So I took a copy of it was an interview with the president by the TVP of Poland. Before he went to Poland, he gave an interview.
Where he said, we've found the trailers.
We found the weapons of mass destruction. We found biological laboratories.
Right, right.
So I gave that to him, and I waited for him to call me back. I called him this morning, and of course, I'm not going to get the $1,000.
Yeah.
So we went back and forth. It's the same thing. It's like they don't want to hear the truth.
What's this guy's name?
The guy's name is, hang on. It's Richard Corro, C-O-R-R-O-W.
Okay, Richard Corro, give us a call, 1-866-889-8894.
He listened to Rush, I'm quite sure.
Yeah, well, okay.
But anyway,
if anybody knows him, call him up and tell him he's being discussed on the air and he ought to get on here and defend himself.
So we go back and forth, and then I got to the point where I was saying, you know, we should join together on the planet to fight terrorism.
Yeah.
Instead of just blowing up countries, we need to go and get together and network. And he said, well, that would be dumbing down.
Jeez.
It came to the point where we were better than everybody else on the planet. We were smarter. It was the arrogance.
You know, it's
and
not...
I think
it's,
that's
it,
what's
it's
driving
beyond,
a lot of the difference.
Jeff, it's beyond arrogance. It's stupidity.
Yeah, but it might be stupidity, but I think the arrogance brings on the stupidity.
Yeah, you know, but I mean, first of all, here's a very unfortunate unpleasant reality, and that is that very often terrorism works, and after it's worked, the terrorists are celebrated. I mean, it's the history of a whole bunch of countries, including the United States of America. And you know that you had non-normal combat, right? You had basically insurgencies and insurrections, and so number one, I mean, let's just acknowledge this reality and say you can't fight a war against terrorism. You can fight a war against specific people who have specific ideologies.
Right.
You know, you can go after, you know, but you also have to understand why they are behaving the way they're behaving. And then you decide, okay, now we understand why they're behaving this way. We can decide whether we're going to kill them or we're going to work something out with them. But this administration is just nuts. 20 minutes past the hour.
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is the small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service. Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Wakefield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do you know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dog, they don't work on commission. Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer, the new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack, and automatic security updates block out viruses. That's speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers instead of sitting on hold with tech support.
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like the small dog who everybody makes room for, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service. Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com or at their showroom on Route 100 in Waitsfield.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
Who is it?
Special delivery.
Who?
Pizza Man.
Hey, you're not the Pizza Man. You're the cable guy again.
Price Patrol.
No, you're not. I can see your van. You're the cable company. I'm not going to let you raise my rates again. I'm calling American Satellite to get a DirecTV system.
Presidential candidate.
Are you going to offer me over 125 digital quality channels for as little as $39.99 a month, including my local channels?
Ice Cream Man.
Yeah, like that's going to work. If I call American Satellite right now, I can get a four-room DirecTV system, including professional installation free. Can you beat that?
Pizza Man.
You already tried that. Well, that's it. I'm calling to get my DirecTV system.
Call 800-505-1546. That's 800-505-1546. For new customers only. Annual programming commitment required. Ask how you can get your first 6 months for only $29.99 a month, a $60 value. Offer ends July 17th. Call now. 800-505-1546.
A must read, The Edison Gene, ADHD and the Gift of the Hunter Child by Tom Hartman, best-selling author of Attention Deficit Disorder, A Different Perception. Ed Halliwell, a nationally recognized expert on ADD, said this about the Edison Gene.
Tom Hartman demonstrates that ADHD can be associated with creativity, high achievement, and a most successful adaptive style.
The Edison Gene, now available in bookstores everywhere.
Do the Republicans or the Democrats have a clear vision for America that actually includes democracy, fairness, and justice? Do the Greens or the Progressives? How can we create a shared vision of the kind of future we want for our children? This is Tom Hartman, and I'll be exploring these and many other issues with guests from a wide variety of viewpoints, as well as taking your calls.
The Tom Hartman Show, 12 p.m. till 3 p.m. Eastern Standard Time.
Visit iowapeace.com for books on justice and peace. The Last Liberal Outlaw is Mike Palasek's new novel. Chuck Gregory with BlueEar.com had this to say. Palasek is at his best when writing about small-town America. It's a place he clearly loves, even as he pokes fun at its quirks and reveals the sickness that lies just below the surface. It's a place he knows, and he shares his knowledge in delightfully original ways, even as he cries out for change. We haven't had a writer like Palasek since Kurt Vonnegut was at his peak. Mike is an Iowa author, former federal prisoner for peace, small-town newspaper reporter, seminarian, and nominee for the U.S. House of Representatives in the Iowa Democratic Party 2000 election. For more information and more about Mike's other novels, visit iowapeace.com. The revolution won't be televised, but you can read about it. The Last Liberal Outlaw, A New American Revolution, is happening in the heartland.
This is the Democracy Zone with Tom Hartman.
The sins of the father shall be visited.
And welcome back. 24 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. Telling the truth that multinational corporations would rather you were unaware of. The Bush administration certainly unhappy about. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. And Jane in Santa Fe, New Mexico is on the line. Hey, Jane, welcome to the program.
Oh, hi, Tom. I want to thank you first for your program. I at least you tell something that's valid. But one of the things that I really can't stand, I mean, there's so many things that I hear on TV, but one of the things that really flips me out is the fact that they're fighting about that a law about banning the whatever the what do you call that 30-millimeter gun?
You mean assault weapons?
Assault weapon.
Yeah.
I mean, they talk about crime decreasing, and if everybody gets an assault weapon, they'd be everybody on the street be owning an assault weapon. And do you think maybe they're giving them to the people so they could protect themselves in case the terrorists come? Yeah. I never saw such a government that we've ever had before in my life. And if they can, if the Republicans can convince the people to vote for Bush, they'll deserve what they get. Kerry's telling it like it is.
Wait a second, Jane. Do you really think that if, well, for example, let's take an extreme example. The people of Germany. In the early days, and I lived in Germany for a year. I know a lot of Germans. I know a lot of elderly Germans, and many of whom actually believed in Hitler. I have two friends who were actually in Hitler's army, and they in their youth, right? And they believed, at least in the early days, that this guy was going to save their country from the disaster of the Treaty of Versailles and the defeat of World War One and all that. And they believed it when he said that he was going to create 1,000 years of peace and that he was in favor of a new Christianity and Gott mit uns, God is with us on their belt buckles and all this stuff. Do you suggest that the German people, that the hundreds of thousands of people in Dresden, for example, and Berlin who perished in the firebombings by the Americans, deserved to die? The civilians, deserved to die? that they deserve the government that they got?
Well, the thing that upsets me is that they're getting these assault weapons. Are those kind of weapons are the ones we're going to use now? And the young kids today coming up are going to go buy assault weapons?
No, I agree with you there. I just, you know, I very often, Jane, people call in and they say if people are dumb enough to vote for Bush, they deserve, you know, the fascistic government that they're going to
right.
get. And I disagree with that. I think it's a tragedy that people are working so hard they can't pay attention to the news. I think it's a tragedy that our news has been hijacked by corporate interests and turned
exactly.
into infotainment. But I'm unwilling to blame the people who are the victims of that. I think that's like blaming a woman who's been raped for being raped.
Well, I don't know. Sometimes I think that the whole Congress, the Senate, and the House should be women. Maybe they'd understand things better. When I listened to C-SPAN lately, and there was a man talking about all the money they needed, and it wasn't money for the United States.
Yeah.
It was money for someplace else.
Yeah.
And I just can't believe what's going on and what Bush and Cheney are doing. And they're frightening the people of the United States with terror. And they're bringing terror to the front. And if they don't stop it, the people are the ones who are going to suffer for it.
Yeah, and the people are the ones who are suffering right now. I mean, that's the essential reality, Jane, and you're distilling it really well. And
well,
this administration
you just
is so embedded.
Keep up the good work.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Thank
I appreciate
you.
It. Good
Bye.
You. Yeah. Bye now. This administration is so in bed with these corporations. It is so completely. I mean, the ad, that Billionaires for Bush ad that we played in the last hour, it is so completely in bed with these corporations that we really are sliding very rapidly into the corporate-owned state, into a new form of feudalism where money determines power, money is concentrated in the corporate form, and corporations have greater power than governments that we elect, and we don't elect corporations. People say, well, you can vote with your dollars. Forget it. That just means people with the most dollars have the most votes. It's wrong. 29 minutes past the hour.
For more than 27 years, the Progressive magazine In These Times has provided groundbreaking coverage of movements for social, environmental, and economic justice. Author and broadcast personality Studs Terkel calls In These Times his bi-weekly tonic. In These Times features award-winning reporting and analysis of national and international news. Find In These Times on your newsstand or visit us online at www.inthesetimes.com or call 1-800-827-0270. 1-800-827-0270.
Pop and not so pop culture, democracy and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Sarah Turner.
Employees of United Parcel Service filed a lawsuit on Monday against the world's largest package delivery company. The suit alleges violations of the Americans with Disabilities Act and claims that UPS has refused to reinstate permanently disabled employees in positions that would accommodate their medical restrictions. The suit also alleges that the company required employees returning to work following a medical leave of absence to provide a full medical release before they were permitted to work. It also says that the company refuses to meet with disabled employees to determine the extent of their disabilities. Filed in a federal court in Pittsburgh, if successful, the suit could cost the company millions of dollars and affect tens of thousands of employees.
A report released on Monday by the U.S. Commerce Department included the first new economic indicator from the U.S. Census Bureau in nearly 40 years. The new services indicator was created to more accurately gauge how service industries contribute to U.S. economic statistics. Frederick Knickerbocker, Associate Director for Economic Programs, Bureau of the Census, says survey data will be gathered quarterly now instead of annually.
If you add up all the services sectors, they're about $7.8 trillion. They are a gigantic piece of the American economy. They are the largest piece of the American economy. And so it's very important that we can begin to track quarter by quarter what's happening to sales, to revenues, the level of activity in these sectors. We're laying down the baseline to really begin to track these things on a quarterly basis.
Knickerbocker added these new numbers show revenues increased by 5.4% in key U.S. service industries.
Following in the footsteps of United Airlines, U.S. Airways has asked a judge for permission to skip a major pension payment due this week. The airline filed for bankruptcy for the second time in 2 years on Sunday, and it announced on Monday that it would not be able to make a payment to cover the pensions of machinists and flight attendants. The airline also said it's considering terminating those plans altogether. In addition, Delta Airlines said this weekend that it may file for bankruptcy if pilots continue to retire early. Pilots, concerned that the flagging airline may have to file for bankruptcy anyway, are choosing to retire early and take a lump sum payment of their pensions. Here's today's Dow Bob Report. The information technology market continues to weaken in the United States. A new poll of 500 hiring managers by the Information Technology Association of America reveals that 270,000 fewer IT workers will be hired this year than in 2003. A Department of Labor report released last month echoes the finding. Analysis of the report by Information Week revealed that the number of employed IT professionals has decreased by nearly 7% in the past 3 years, and IT unemployment has nearly doubled.
You've been listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Fearlessly exploring the truth of the day, here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back. Not content to simply put America in the crosshairs, the contract on America, Newt Gingrich's and his revolutionaries, the class of 1994. One of them is back, a former three-term congressman. I thought these guys had said that they were all in favor of term limits. Anyhow, Salon.com contributor Robert Schlesinger has laid this out in a new article on Salon.com. Which I think just came out yesterday. Is that the case, Robert?
That is correct.
Great. So people can check it out at Salon.com. And it's about the congressman from Oklahoma who is running for the United States Senate, right, Tom Coburn?
Yep, Tom Coburn, who actually was one of the people who said he favored term limits. And unlike a lot of the folks in that class who came on and said, yeah, I know, I'm going to limit myself and then kind of stuck around here in Washington, Coburn actually did leave after three terms as he had promised.
Oh, that's interesting.
But the thing about all the term limits folks is, you know, being in Washington is bad as long as it's only in one office. If you kind of hop around from the House to the Senate, that apparently is okay, and you don't get enculturated into the Washington culture.
Oh, I see. So he's in favor of term limits unless you're politically climbing.
I guess that's the case, yeah.
Because he's running for the Senate, right? The United
yeah.
States Senate from Oklahoma. And this is a guy who has said, and I'm quoting him from your article here, the gay community has infiltrated the very centers of power in every area across this country, and they wield extreme power. That agenda is the greatest threat to our freedom that we face today. Really? I mean,
apparently, I don't know, maybe Osama bin Laden is gay, or, you know, I don't know how that all.
Well, he's got four wives. Maybe he had to get four wives so that they could, like, you know, keep each other happy because he was with his friend, I forget the guy's name. Oh, that's terrible, isn't it?
Well, maybe he was with Saddam, you know, then it all connects together.
Well, of course, Saddam was his secret lover. Yes. Now we're getting, now this is something even Newt would try to sell, right? It's just amazing. So anyhow, we've got this guy. He's a little nutty to begin with. He's, you know, telling us that the greatest threat to our freedom today is the so-called gay agenda. Mr. Wedge issue, I suppose. You know, Newt Gingrich recently having given a speech, what was it, about 2 months ago that he spoke before the supposedly private, he got out into the news media, group of Republicans, and he said, this year, go for the wedge issues. And he told them, you know, how they had polled and which, you know, even flag burning was polling well, and so that's being resurrected in the Senate now, you know, which is what George Herbert Walker Bush used against Dukakis, was flag
burning. Right,
you know?
So, well, Newt was always, I mean, Newt was sort of, when he came to power, was on the cutting edge of telling Republicans which words to use to describe Democrats.
Yep. Newt's famous word list. I mean, this is NLP run amok. You know, it's what's his name? George Orwell rolling over in his grave
yep.
here.
Yep.
So we've got this guy, Oklahoma Representative Senate candidate, congressman from Oklahoma, now running for the United States Senate, Tom Coburn. And Tom Coburn is a medical doctor, right?
Yes.
And puts himself forward. He's an obstetrician. Puts himself forward as, you know, your kindly family doctor sort of thing.
He's actually he does obstetrician things. I'm not going to try to
pronounce
the word,
yeah.
But he's not actually technically an obstetrician. I've been clarified. A reader who's part of the Obstetrician Association of America or something.
Yeah.
Clarified that for me. So he's not actually an obstetrician, but he does obstetrics.
Obstetrics, yeah. Interesting. So he's not, but he's not board certified in it. But he has, for example, performed abortions.
He has performed abortions. He is fiercely anti-choice, pro-life, however you want to.
In fact, this is
whatever you want to call it.
This is a guy.
But he has said that he is against abortions. As he puts it, abortion on demand, which he defines as anything that is not threatening the life of the mother. He has performed abortions in cases where the life of the mother was in danger.
Oh, so he allows himself under his own loophole. But he says the doctors who perform abortions on demand should be what?
A death penalty.
Put to death. And now, under our murder laws, in most, I mean, you know, murder is generally a state crime. There's only a few variations of federal murder crimes. But in most states, if, for example, Robert Schlesinger, if I were to hire you to kill somebody and you pulled the trigger, I would also be convicted of murder. You would be convicted of first-degree murder, of the, premeditated. But I could be convicted of first-degree murder, too, in many states, could I not?
I don't know.
I know that I could be convicted of some kind of, I'm not an attorney, some
yeah,
kind
you'd
of
obviously be, there, you'd be, you'd definitely be on the hook for some sort of crime. I don't know specifically which.
Yeah. And conspiracy to commit murder, if nothing else, but I'm quite certain that, you know, so if the doctors are getting the death penalty, then that means the woman who got the abortion is also a participant in this crime. She should get what, life in jail?
Well, you'd have to ask Dr. Coburn. But that would be the logical extension of his position.
Yeah, we should get him on this program. It would be interesting to ask him.
I think you'd have fun.
I'm sure I would. So, and this guy also now is a champion of Bush's so-called Medicare reforms that are handing hundreds of billions of dollars off to the drug companies and the insurance companies, and yet he has his own sordid past in this area.
Well, I got hold of some of a deposition he gave in a civil malpractice suit a dozen years ago. And when he was a doctor, he, according to his own words and his deposition, did what, on its face, I mean, I am no lawyer, but it seems pretty clear-cut, was Medicaid fraud.
At the state level, then?
At the state level. But, of course, Medicaid is a federal program that's state-administered.
Right.
He had a case where a patient came in, had what is called an ectopic pregnancy, which means that the fetus didn't implant in the womb but implanted somewhere else, in this case in one of the fallopian tubes.
Yeah, almost always, in fact, in the fallopian tubes.
And he had to go in and remove the tube that had the fetus implanted in it. And at the same time, he removed the unaffected fallopian tube, sterilizing the woman or tied off the tube. Now, the
why?
Malpractice case in question, the woman sued him saying that he had done this without her permission. The case eventually was thrown out when she did not show up for court. So, you know, we don't know.
Did he ever try to explain why he sterilized a woman that he was supposed to just be doing a relatively routine, you know, removal of an ectopic pregnancy?
Well, he said that she had asked him to do it, and what the crucial and there is in other court documents, there's reason to believe that at least, you know, before the specific evening, she had asked him to do it, and he had said, you know, before the actual night in question, he had said, no, I'm not going to do it and there are two reasons. One is that you're too young. The other is that he told the woman, you're on Medicaid. And Medicaid won't pay for an elective sterilization for someone under the age of 21. He says that on the night in question, she asked him to do it again, and finally he said okay, even though she was still under 21. And the whole thing turned on, he says that he asked a nurse to get her to fill out the requisite permission form, and for whatever reason that form was not filled out, and we don't know if it was because of a clerical error or because she refused it.
Yeah, aren't we sort of picking nits here, Robert?
Well, the question of the civil case is sort of beside the point because it comes down to he said, she said.
Yeah.
But what we do know is that Medicaid does not pay for elective sterilization for someone under 21.
Mm-hmm.
And under the Medicaid rules, if you do a procedure that's covered, and also at the same time do something that's not covered, so the dealing with the ectopic pregnancy is covered and allowable. Doing the other thing is not. Doing the sterilization. If you do both, then Medicaid won't pay for anything.
Yeah.
And
then he filed a claim and he got paid.
He did both. He sort of didn't really in his post-operative filings didn't really talk about the second thing that wasn't allowed. And then submitted it to Medicaid and got paid.
Yeah.
And in his deposition in this case, they said, well, why didn't you talk about the other procedure? And he said, well, because then Medicaid wouldn't have paid for it.
Yeah.
And he told the woman and her mother, hey, you can't talk about this because I could get in trouble.
Okay. Let's move along to some of the other things that I think are a little more shocking about this guy. His comments about Schindler's List, the movie about the Holocaust?
Yeah, the very famous, very powerful movie about the Holocaust. NBC ran it unedited a few years back, and he put out press releases and made statements condemning NBC for showing a movie that had such violence and nudity in it.
Yeah.
Of course, the nudity was, naked Jews being herded into the ovens and such.
Yeah.
So it wasn't really what most people would consider the sort of,
Well, do you think his objection was genuinely, that he was horrified by the sight of a naked body, or do you think that there's some sort of anti-Semitic comment or subtext here?
I don't think there's any reason to believe at this point that it was anti-Semitic. I think it was simply
he's just reactionary,
reacting to to what he saw on television.
After the Columbine High School massacre, he goes in and he says, "If I want to buy a bazooka, I ought to be able to do that."
Well, his interpretation of the Second Amendment apparently is that pretty much the government shouldn't obstruct his ability to get any kind of armament of any size or scope.
Yeah.
So bazooka, go for it.
Yeah, and then after Cryptosporidium, the parasite in the water, which killed 104 people and sickened 400,000 in Milwaukee in 93 and 19 in Vegas in 94, he says, the lethal spores can sometimes be very helpful for doctors because it helps us identify those people who are, in fact, immunocompromised?
Yeah.
Well, it does. I mean, if somebody with,
yeah,
somebody
if
with HIV gets it, they die. What's the bottom line here about this guy? Robert, we're talking with Robert Schlesinger, Salon.com contributor. Robert, what do we really need to know about this guy? Is there some, I think we're getting a picture of him as sort of an eccentric right-wing crank, but is he really dangerous?
Well, so long as he's a private citizen, presumably not. But if he gets into the U.S. Senate, I mean, one U.S. senator can stop up anything. And I didn't include in my piece, but I gather that he's made comments like, if he gets to the Senate, nothing will pass until all of Bush's judges are confirmed, and that Strom Thurmond holds the record for filibustering,
yeah,
which is 24 or 25 hours, and he said at that point I'd just be getting warmed up. I mean, the thing about this guy is that even his the other Republicans in Congress didn't like him because he has his beliefs and he's going to push those without compromise.
What do you think the chances are of him winning in Oklahoma?
It's a real toss-up race. The polls show it to be very close. Oklahoma is a very conservative state, and Bush is going to win there overwhelmingly. So it's going to be very close, and he probably has the edge in a very tight race.
Is there a current senator that he's running to replace a Republican, or is he trying to unseat a Democrat?
No, he is trying to replace a Republican who is retiring, Don Nichols, who was for many years the assistant majority leader for the Republicans in the Senate.
Yeah, another toxic character. Robert Schlesinger, the author of a fascinating piece, Medicine Man, in the current Salon.com. Robert, thanks for being with us here on the Tom Hartman program.
Tom, thank you very much.
I appreciate it. Good to talk with you. Have a great
good
afternoon.
To talk to you.
Thanks. It's the Tom Hartman radio program, 13 minutes before the hour here. George W. Bush, the Bush administration, do they, speaking of doctors, speaking of water, speaking of environmental policy, yes, our great environmental Bush Greenwatch alert music. Using a backdoor route to deregulation, the Bush administration, reports Greenwatch, has removed clean water protections for 20 million acres of American wetlands and tens of thousands of miles of streams, lakes, and ponds, according to documents obtained through the Federal Freedom of Information Act. We had to sue under FOIA to find out about this. I mean, it wasn't even announced. 20 million acres of wetlands, tens of thousands of miles of streams, lakes, and ponds, no longer protected from pollution. As Paul Schwartz, National Policy Coordinator for Clean Water Action, noted, for the first time in over 30 years of cleaning up our waters, we're going backwards. Clean Water Act, as you will recall, took effect in 1972. And from then until roughly last year, the percentage of the nation's waters deemed clean enough for fishing and swimming just about doubled. Just about doubled. But now in the last year, or really the last 2 years, you could look back at these statistics, the recent state reports show those numbers are declining. In fact, here's what this guy says, Paul Schwartz. He says, the water's getting dirtier, and the Bush administration is leading one of the most fundamental attacks on a law that has arguably done more to protect the environment and public health than any other environmental law. Now, we got 219 members of the House of Representatives and 33 senators who signed a letter to Bush begging him not to devastate our environment by promulgating these rules. He's ignoring them. Let them drink arsenic. 10 minutes before the hour.
Do you want to find out what the invasion of Iraq was really about? Read the new illustrated book, We the People, A Call to Take Back America by Tom Hartman. Once you've read We the People, you'll understand why conservatives are trying to bankrupt government and how perpetual war is used as a political strategy in the United States. You'll learn how our votes are in danger and what we must do about it. You'll discover why the Alien and Sedition Acts of 1798 matter today. Populist watchdog and national radio commentator Jim Hightower had this to say about We the People.
Not only does this book tell you what's really going on, but it even draws you a picture of it. Read, learn, and act.
We the People, A Call to Take Back America by Tom Hartman. A compelling story of how a government by and for the people has been replaced by corporate domination. Fully illustrated by Neil Cohn, We the People issues a call to action in a most entertaining way. Available in bookstores everywhere.
Are George Bush's policies getting you down? Have you had enough of Bush's messianic militarism? Does John Ashcroft's assault on the Bill of Rights scare you? Do you believe that Dick Cheney had his conscience surgically removed 3 decades ago? Are you angry at the Iraq fiasco that was the brainchild of Deputy Secretary of Defense Paul out of his Wolfowitz? Well, then subscribe to the Progressive magazine. You'll get the insights of Barbara Ehrenreich, the inspiration of Howard Zinn, and the mirth of Molly Ivins, Will Durst, and Kate Clinton. They'll help you survive this dark age. And check this out. You can subscribe today for only $12 for 12 monthly issues. Simply get on the web and go to www.progressive.com. www.pbsradio.org or call 1-800-827-0555 and mention offer radio. That's 1-800-827-0555 and mention the radio offer from the Tom Hartman Program. That's The Progressive. It's your antidote to reactionary policies. On September 17th, I'll be broadcasting live on WTKG AM 1230 in Grand Rapids at the Celebration Cinema, noon to 3 p.m. at the corner of Knapp and East Beltline. Drop by early at 11 a.m. in the Wave Room for a get-together, then listen to the show. At 4 p.m. after the show, I'll be at Schuller Bookstore on 28th Street for a book signing. For more information, call 616-776-5541. That's 616-776-5541.
Can you imagine a world in which all kids live healthy, safe, productive, and prosperous lives? Well, that world is within our grasp, and there's a way to reach it. It's called Econonomics. And to learn more, just pull up DennisWeaverNow.com and learn how to get a free report of our Econonomics educational program and how together we can build a world of prosperity without pollution. DennisWeaverNow.com. DennisWeaverNow.com. DennisWeaverNow.com.
This is a Workers Independent News Service feature story. I'm Sarah Turner. 1,500 unionized federal government workers scored a major victory on Wednesday with an amendment halting the outsourcing of immigration processing work to private companies. The amendment was added to a $32 billion Department of Homeland Security financing measure by just two votes, with five Republicans supporting the Democrats.
There may be some vocations that privatizing is a good thing. However, when it comes to national security and Department of Homeland Security's ability to protect the American public, these are not positions that should be privatized.
Charles Showalter, president of the National Homeland Security Council, AFGE, says there's been trouble with private companies who've been entrusted with screening immigration applications.
Unfortunately, every time we privatize jobs within the Department of Homeland Security, we run into major problems. Out in California, when a contractor ran behind, they shredded 90,000 applications for benefits within the Immigration and Naturalization Service.
He also believes only trained professionals should be performing criminal background checks.
These jobs are privatized to somebody earning minimum wage to increase company profits. We run a greater risk of people being compromised in the positions that face it. These officers deal with criminal background investigations. They deal with counterterrorism efforts, and it's not the type of information that we want the general public to have access to or even have the ability to manipulate.
The amendment throws a wrench into congressional leaders' plans to recess for the year in October, before the November 2nd presidential and congressional elections. George Bush has threatened to veto the entire funding measure, saying that privatization will improve customer service and save money.
Democracy to the United States of America. Here's Tom Hartman.
What was it you wanted? Tell me again so I know.
Welcome
what
back.
What's happening in there? What's going on in your show?
Well, tell you
what was it you wanted?
What's going on in this show is pretty obvious. What's going on in the Bush-Cheney show? They'll go to the Supreme Court to keep you from finding out. And in fact, they did. And conveniently, the Supreme Court said, well, I'm sorry, Mr. Cheney, you are a public servant drawing a public salary, even though you do get up to $1 million a year from Halliburton and all that. But nonetheless, what you do in public has to be in public. But we'll let you release those energy meeting files after the election. Wasn't that nice of them? We're seeing a politicization. Is that a word, politicization? Anyway, we're seeing the essential, fundamental government functions that normally should be just straight up. We're here to do a particular specific job for we the people, because this is why this agency was created. whether it's the Environmental Protection Agency, which is supposed to protect the environment, which is now being auctioned off to the highest corporate bidder and the largest Bush campaign contributor, or whether it's the Secret Service. This is one that I find particularly troubling. This from the Washington Post this weekend. Dana Milbank wrote this article. Dana has his byline, a lot of good stuff. This guy's a good investigative reporter. He might be the Bob Woodward of our era. Anyhow, Secret Service agents are famous for their willingness to take a bullet for the president, he writes. Less famous is their willingness to take out a heckler for the president. See, with all previous presidents, somebody wants to heckle the president. The president, you know, his staff can deal with that. The local hosts can deal with that. The Secret Service's job is to protect him from death threats. No longer. The Bush campaign has made unprecedented efforts to control access to its events. On Thursday, seven AIDS activists who heckled President Bush were shoved and pulled from the room, some by their hair, one by her bra straps, and then arrested for disorderly conduct and detained for an hour. After Bush campaign bouncers handled the evictions, which is how it should be, Secret Service agents, accompanied by Bush's personal aide, supervised the arrests and detentions of the activists and blocked the media from access to the hecklers. This is wrong. This is a misuse of government officials. The Bush campaign has made unprecedented. Sometimes people are even required to sign loyalty oaths. See, this is just, it's just wrong. Absolutely wrong. And on we go.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
The Founding Fathers thought they'd stop corporations from ever overthrowing elected government. Little did they know that 200 years later, democracy would be stolen and twisted in the name of so-called conservative values. Hi, this is Tom Hartman. The Founders of America fought the Revolutionary War against the excessive corporate power of the East India Company, and presidents from Jefferson to Eisenhower warned us that extremely big businesses could destroy democracy. You'll find this extraordinary American story in my book, Unequal Protection: The Rise of Corporate Dominance and the Theft of Human Rights. It starts with the Boston Tea Party and ends with the rampant corruption of the Bush administration. It tells the dramatic story of how corporations hijacked the Bill of Rights, setting the stage for the CEO takeover of America. And it shows how we can take America back and tells the stories of Americans from Pennsylvania to California who are doing just that right now.
Unequal Protection is available in bookstores nationwide. And you can read several chapters online at unequalprotection.com. That's Unequal Protection by Tom Hart.
Pop and not so pop culture, democracy and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Sarah Turner.
Employees of United Parcel Service filed a lawsuit on Monday against the world's largest package delivery company. The suit alleges violations of the Americans with Disabilities Act and claims that UPS has refused to reinstate permanently disabled employees in positions that would accommodate their medical restrictions. The suit also alleges that the company required employees returning to work following a medical leave of absence to provide a full medical release before they were permitted to work. It also says that the company refuses to meet with disabled employees to determine the extent of their disabilities. Filed in a federal court in Pittsburgh, if successful, the suit could cost the company millions of dollars and affect tens of thousands of employees.
A report released on Monday by the U.S. Commerce Department included the first new economic indicator from the U.S. Census Bureau in nearly 40 years. The new services indicator was created to more accurately gauge how service industries contribute to U.S. economic statistics. Frederick Knickerbocker, Associate Director for Economic Programs, Bureau of the Census, says survey data will be gathered quarterly now instead of annually.
If you add up all the services sectors, they're about $7.8 trillion. They are a gigantic piece of the American economy. They are the largest piece of the American economy. And so it's very important that we can begin to track quarter by quarter what's happening to sales, to revenues, the level of activity in these sectors. We're laying down the baseline to really begin to track these things on a quarterly basis.
Knickerbocker added these new numbers show revenues increased by 5.4% in key U.S. service industries.
Following in the footsteps of United Airlines, U.S. Airways has asked a judge for permission to skip a major pension payment due this week. The airline filed for bankruptcy for the second time in 2 years on Sunday, and it announced on Monday that it would not be able to make a payment to cover the pensions of machinists and flight attendants. The airline also said it's considering terminating those plans altogether. In addition, Delta Airlines said this weekend that it may file for bankruptcy if pilots continue to retire early. Pilots, concerned that the flagging airline may have to file for bankruptcy anyway, are choosing to retire early and take a lump sum payment of their pensions. Here's today's Dow Bob Report. The information technology market continues to weaken in the United States. A new poll of 500 hiring managers by the Information Technology Association of America reveals that 270,000 fewer IT workers will be hired this year than in 2003. A Department of Labor report released last month echoes the finding. Analysis of the report by Information Week revealed that the number of employed IT professionals has decreased by nearly 7% in the past 3 years, and IT unemployment has nearly doubled.
You've been listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
I've been a lifelong Republican since I was old enough to vote, and I thought that Bush would be a fiscally conservative individual. I feel betrayed. I don't believe that a government should be engaging in reckless spending, recklessly stretching the military to the point of breaking, recklessly trying to stretch, alter, and amend the Constitution, which this country was based on. And that's why I'm going to vote for John Kerry.
Move On PAC is responsible for the content of this advertisement.
Corporate advertising is everywhere. I don't mean on radio, TV, billboards, and other commercial spaces. I also don't merely mean that it's in our public schools, yammering at us in elevators, catching us by surprise in our parks and museums, and otherwise intruding into our community spaces. I mean, it's everywhere. I know you're thinking, Hightower, there you go again with the gross exaggeration. But I'm not exaggerating. You want gross? Meet the latest advertising advance, Whizmark. That's whiz as in take a whiz. Yes, we're talking about male urination and the advertising potential therein. Perhaps you think that I'm going to go on a tear about the little TV screens that many places are now putting above the urinals so you can watch an ad as you, well, whiz. But no, that would be almost civilized. I'm not talking about advertising above the urinals. I'm talking about ads in the urinals. Indeed, ads you whiz on. You know those plastic urinal screens that also deodorize? Whizmark has now accessorized them with ads. Not some bland printed ad, either. Dr. Richard Deutsch, creator of the Whizmark, has brought to us the world's first, are you ready? Interactive urinal communicator. He offers one that has a motion detector. When a gentleman steps forward to do his business, a ring of flashing lights are triggered in the screen, drawing the gentleman's startled attention to your corporate logo, safely protected in the middle of the screen by a waterproof casing. Or if that's too subtle, Whizmark offers a voice and sound model with a microprocessor that shouts ad slogans and corporate jingles at the urinator. Still not tacky enough? Got you covered. Dr. Deutsch has the patent on a radio frequency model that can read your ID card and personally greet you when you step up to the urinal. Hey, Frank, good to see you again. This is Jim Hightower saying, I don't even want to know where the ad hucksters are taking us next.
Hi, my name is Sophie. For 5 years, I lived alone in this big house Joe and I built 35 years ago. Our girls grew up in this house. They visited every couple of weeks, and I loved seeing my grandkids, but most of the time I was on my own. Some days I didn't even go out. I just felt sad. Lonely, I guess. One day my daughter came over and said, "Get your coat, Mom, we're going for a drive." She wouldn't tell me where. When we got to the ASPCA, I got nervous. But once I met little Stevie, everything changed. Stevie's my cat. It's hard to express what a difference little Stevie's made in my life. It's mostly small things, like hearing his ridiculously loud purr. Stevie brought love back into my house. I may have saved his life, I don't know. But I do know that he made mine a lot brighter.
This is Richard Thompson, member of the board of directors of the ASPCA, encouraging you to visit your local animal shelter and adopt a cat.
uncovers corporate lies, exposes political corruption, and has a clear vision of what America could become. Here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back, my friends. Tom Hartman here with you. You ever wanted to talk to one of those folks who is at the pivot points of history? One of the people who have really created change in America, who have really brought about transformation in this nation. Ronnie Duggar, in my opinion, is one of those people. A man I know, we've met, we've broken bread together. I hold in very high regard. He's an author and reporter, founder of numerous publications. He's the founder of the Alliance for Democracy. He's written books, biographies of LBJ and Ronald Reagan. And he was very involved in Ralph Nader's campaign in a funny sort of way last time around. And this time you wrote a piece. Ronnie, welcome to the program, by the way.
Great to be here, Tom.
Oh, it's great to have you. And by the way, if any of our...
build up like that, I ought to run for office. Well, maybe not.
Maybe not. I don't know. But maybe, you know, hopefully let's not go there. And by the way, our number 1-866-889-8894, if any of our listeners would like to say hi to you or if they have questions. I remember you wrote this piece, and as I recall, it was in The Nation, wasn't it? Ralph Don't Run?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, 2002.
And you know Ralph Nader.
Oh, well, yeah, it goes back decades, and I was one of the five people who nominated him at the Los Angeles Convention in 96, and I presented him to the convention that nominated him in Los Angeles in 2000. I privately was arguing that he should run as a Democrat. He declined to do that both in 1994 and 2000 in conversations with me.
Yeah.
But when he supported him both times.
You think he should have done like Dennis Kucinich did and just try and, you know, be honest and be part of the system and make the thing work?
Well,
and if you don't win, you don't win.
I thought it was worth a try. Yeah. And that he might clean out the Democratic Party, at least in between the nomination and the election, even if it didn't win.
Yeah.
His first reason for negating that idea was that he couldn't govern the way he should, governing the corporations without their turning the workforce against him. His second reason in 2000 was the Democratic Party had become too corrupt. He didn't want anything to do with it.
All the more reason to infiltrate and fix it, isn't it?
Well, that's right. There are obverse ways of looking at it, and there's the Huey Long way of looking at it. Go in as a rebel. A rebel populist,
yeah.
And
well, it's the Franklin Roosevelt way.
I thought, yeah. when I urged him not to run in 2004, I urged him to run for the Senate or governor. Imagine what Nader would do on the floor of the Senate to the debates in the Senate. He would transform them in a comparable way to the way Huey Long.
Yeah, or at the very least, he'd be another Paul Wellstone. I mean, you know, this is a guy
he'd be more than another Paul Wellstone. He'd be better because. Better informed, probably, although Paul was very well informed and more charismatic, I guess you're going to have to say.
So what is going on with Ralph now? I mean, here this story just floated past my desk this morning that the Democratic Party, the state of Florida has just decided, even though a judge in Florida said, well, these nominating petitions for Ralph Nader to put his name on the ballot do have some problems. A court order had said, no, he can't go on the ballot. And the Secretary of State has now said, because there's a hurricane coming, we're going to put him on the ballot.
Now,
I'm not kidding you, Ronnie.
Secretary of State, it's Jeb Bush.
Yeah,
Jeb
of course.
Bush appointed the Secretary of State, Glenda Hood, just as he did Catherine Harris.
Well, this is the Division of Elections Director, Dawn Roberts.
It's not Glenda Hood speaking. It's Jeb Bush speaking. Yes, we want Nader on the ballot.
Yeah.
And the reasons for that are perfectly obvious. 97,000 votes for Ralph in 2000. Put the election close enough that the Supreme Court could steal it in Florida. And obviously, Bush is hoping for a similar result this time.
Yeah. I want to get into your thoughts on, you know, what's going on with Ralph. Let's take a call here first. Sue in Minnesota is on the line. 1-866-889-8894 is our telephone number. Hey, Sue, you're on live with me and with Ronnie Duggar.
Hi, Sue.
Good afternoon.
Hey, Sue, what's up?
I just called to remind your Minnesota listeners that today is primary day in Minnesota.
Uh-huh.
And we are testing out a new computer software here.
Oh, my.
So this is kind of a dry run for the general elections coming up in November.
Yeah.
Well, we just found out last week in testimony before the Senate that over 20,000 names have been purged from the voter registration list here.
Is
so we're trying to encourage people to vote today in the primaries to make sure that their names are listed and that they're all set to go.
Amazing.
Oh, you know, those were ex-felons or what? Changed addresses? What reasons did they give?
You know, we don't know. They didn't give a reason. All we know is they installed new software, and when they pulled the names up from the old voter registration list into the new, we know that 20,000 were dropped.
You know, there was over 100, Sue and Ronnie, there was over 100,000, I believe, dropped just from Hamilton County, Ohio a few months ago. Cincinnati or Cleveland.
There's a coordinated program and has been for a long time, probably intensified now. It generally comes from the Republican Party, and it's trying to keep minorities, anybody that'll vote liberal, from voting.
Yeah.
And they used all kinds of dirty tricks in Florida, and I think they're braced to use dirty tricks all over the country.
Yeah, I see it coming. Sue, thanks for letting us know about that.
Okay,
thank you. Appreciate it. Good to hear from you. Thanks. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. Ronnie, here's the question.
I'm against Ralph this time.
Yeah, I know you are. And you've essentially begged him not to run before. I mean,
I did. Ralph, well, I argued in the vigorous way you do with Nader.
Yeah, yeah.
We had it for an hour, Tom. I wish we'd
you and him one on one.
It was a formal debate, practically.
At one moment, I
told Ralph I wish we were on television, but I've never quoted him.
Yeah.
Because that was a private conversation. But essentially, I was willing to risk electing the Republican, electing Bush, or electing Dole. I was willing to risk the short-term damage that would do to the poor and good policies because of the long-run damage that the collapse of the Democratic Party has done to all kinds of vital issues and civil rights and everything else, the welfare of the poor, the condition of the country. But after 2 years of Bush, one could see that we were going into a crypto-fascist situation. We were becoming a nation that was guided by Bush's doctrine that we have the right to commit aggressive war whenever the president wants to. Incredible declension down the slide to fascism. And in that case, we don't have a long run left. We have, in my opinion, we have to act in the short run, and we have to beat Bush no matter what.
Yeah, because otherwise,
so under those circumstances, I asked Ralph not to run. He chose to run, and I'm voting for Kerry.
Yeah, because otherwise, we may well be looking at literally the end of the American empire, an empire that we didn't even want to be an empire. We simply wanted it to be a republic until Bush came along and said, you know, let's say, and his neocons, and said, no, we're an empire.
Yeah, so. Tom, let's put it this way. We're not looking at the end of the American empire, except in the sense there is an analogy with Rome. But what we're really losing is a free country,
yeah,
a great, powerful, free country. And if we turn into the megalith of right-wing reaction in the world, you've already got Putin turning into a dictator in front of our eyes in the last few days in Russia. You've got people in Asia citing the right to use preemptive strikes. If the United States can do it, a high official in India said the same thing. In other words, the doctrine, well, go kill and mutilate for what you want, is taking over the world because of Bush's example. That's our fault.
Yeah.
What I'm afraid, Tom, is that the corruption of the mass media, especially television, by its ownership by these highly organized financial interests called transnational corporations and conglomerates, is making the American people collectively unfit to rule.
Mm-hmm.
Democracy can't work without an informed electorate. Thomas Jefferson told us that many years ago.
Yeah, and we've seen it demonstrated over and over.
They're not getting enough information. They're not getting the truth about what a monstrous decline in American goodness has occurred under Bush.
Yeah, and unfortunately, and this is another topic that we can get into in just a minute. I want to take a call here, but unfortunately, Messrs. Kerry and Edwards are either not saying this particularly loudly, or the media is not reporting it. And frankly, the only way there's no way to know other than talking to people who've been to the campaign rallies, where it sounds like they're actually being pretty hard hitting. But we'll get back to that with Ronnie Duggar here. First, let's take a call. Rick in West Virginia, 1-866-889-8894. Our telephone number, if you'd like to be on. Hey, Rick, welcome to the program.
Hey, listen, I called about the voter suppression because they're doing the same thing here in southern West Virginia as the lady was talking about a minute ago.
Oh, really?
Pretty heavy Democratic area, and the Republicans started this thing about vote buying,
really?
And all that kind of bull to scare people away from the polls. But I wanted to mention one other thing before I forget.
From the voter rolls.
Yeah. I want one other thing. Can you hear me?
Yeah. You're just fine.
Okay. About 10 years ago, right after the Republicans took control of Congress, or I guess it was 94 or 95, Newt Gingrich was on C-SPAN, and they were talking about the Republican Revolution, and he, of course, he was pretty good about then because they had taken control of the House and the Senate. And he was talking about taking this revolution worldwide.
Yeah.
Now, this was on C-SPAN. I specifically remember anybody that wants to research it, go back and find it. But he was talking about taking this Republican revolution worldwide. And, of course, he's one of these neocons now in with Wolfowitz and Pearl and the rest of them. Mm-hmm. I'm wondering how what he said back in 1994 plays into what's happening right now as far as taking this, quote, Republican revolution worldwide.
Yeah, well, the Republican Revolution is just feudalism reinvented. It's fascism. Your thoughts on that? Thanks for the call, Rick.
Well, Tom, you know what that puts in my mind? It's some more investigative work that needs to be done. I hope other reporters will do it. I'm going to do it.
Good.
Essentially, the United States has been fostering computerized vote counting around the world. And when you do that, of course, you get access to the programming of the elections. In other words, you can steal the elections abroad as well as you can steal them here.
Yeah.
And the only purpose of doing that, of course, would be to consolidate local corrupt elites that would serve the American transnational corporation interest. That's the kind of revolution Newt Gingrich was interested in.
Yeah.
So
historically,
but that, of course, would only be one. But then, of course, you get this whole thing of using the WTO, the bank, the World Bank, and all of those institutions to subordinate local and national interests and indigenous people's interests to the interests of transnational corporations to go anywhere they want and do anything they want to do.
So you're suggesting, Ronnie, that
that's another way of making this thing worldwide. That's what they're doing now.
You're suggesting that historically we've done this in a pretty overt fashion, just going into Nicaragua or Hawaii.
Yeah.
Hawaii, for example. You know, what's good for Dole Pineapple is good for Hawaii.
Sure.
You know, but now we can do it by pretending we don't have to send in an armed force. We don't have to invade the Philippines. We can now put our, you know, have local friendly politicians and have them democratically elected on our electronic voting machines. And, gee, it must be the will of the people. Yeah, are you serious? I mean, this is serious. That's a serious charter.
He's a Workers' Party guy, you know, a perfectly clear-headed economic populist becomes president, realizes that if he does what he wants to do, there'll be a capital flight. There won't be any jobs. Inflation will spike. He'll be thrown out of office.
Yeah, let's explain that in a little more detail right after the break here. We're talking with Ronnie Duggar. Ronnie Duggar, the world-famous author, a biographer of LBJ and Reagan, founder of the Alliance for Democracy. It's the Tom Hartman radio program, 20 minutes past the hour.
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is the small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service. Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Wakefield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do you know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dog, they don't work on commission. Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer, the new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack, and automatic security updates lock out viruses. That's speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers instead of sitting on hold with tech support.
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like the small dog who everybody makes room for, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service. Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com or at their showroom on Route 100 in Waitsfield.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
The last hours of ancient sunlight, the fate of the world, and what we can do before it's too late is Tom Hartman's stunning wake-up call to humanity. Conversations with God author Neil Donald Walsh says this about the book.
Quote it everywhere. Buy 10 books and give them away. Don't let this action go unheard. You may feel like a voice in the wilderness, but it is your voice we're waiting to hear. Yours is the crucial vote. You are the determining factor. We reach critical mass when we reach you, and you choose to reach others with the simple message of this book. Let us act at last in the best interest of all. Then the sun will shine another day, and another still, and life will not merely go on, but achieve its highest expression, its grandest glory, its greatest joy. Can we give this gift to our children? Please say yes.
The Last Hours of Ancient Sunlight, The Fate of the World and What We Can Do Before It's Too Late by Tom Hartman. Available in bookstores everywhere.
For more than 27 years, the Progressive magazine In These Times has provided groundbreaking coverage of movements for social, environmental, and economic justice. Author and broadcast personality Studs Terkel calls In These Times his bi-weekly tonic. In These Times features award-winning reporting and analysis of national and international news. Find In These Times on your newsstand or visit us online at www.inthesetimes.com or call 1-800-827-0270. 1-800-827-0270.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report.
According to the latest State Department data, Iraq's crude oil revenues fell by an average of more than $24 million a day in the month of August, bringing the month's total losses to over $620 million. Almost daily attacks on pipelines and pumping stations have brought oil exports to their lowest level since October 2003. The decline couldn't have come at a worse time, with world oil prices reaching record highs.
Are George Bush's policies getting you down? Have you had enough of Bush's messianic militarism? Does John Ashcroft's assault on the Bill of Rights scare you? Do you believe that Dick Cheney had his conscience surgically removed 3 decades ago? Are you angry at the Iraq fiasco that was the brainchild of Deputy Secretary of Defense Paul out of his Wolfowitz? Well, then subscribe to the Progressive magazine. You'll get the insights of Barbara Ehrenreich, the inspiration of Howard Zinn, and the mirth of Molly Ivins, Will Durst, and Kate Clinton. They'll help you survive this dark age. And check this out. You can subscribe today for only $12 for 12 monthly issues. Simply get on the web and go to www.progressive.org or call 1-800-827-0555 and mention offer radio. That's 1-800-827-0555 and mention the radio offer from the Tom Hartman Program. That's the Progressive. It's your antidote to reactionary policies.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
In God we trust, but not that much. When we reach out for a little crutch, a politician is always near, especially election year.
And welcome back. 24 and a half minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. We're talking with Ronnie Duggar, the author and reporter, founder of the Alliance for Democracy, biographer of LBJ, Reagan, etc. Armin in Florida has called 1-866-889-8894. Armin, you're in Sarasota, Florida. Shouldn't you be fixing to get out of the way of that hurricane?
Well, you know, it's as wobbly as Bush's political ideology.
Okay. You're going to hang out for another day or two, huh?
And it's frightening, but it appears to be just as windy.
Yeah, there you go. All right, so what did you have for Ronnie here?
Well, I want to comment about Ralph Nader, but first, what do you guys think of a bumper sticker that would say, Waffle starts with W?
Yeah, you know, I think this W stuff, you know, I think Jay Leno, a Republican that he is, was really right. You know, this is running for second grade kind of stuff or whatever. What are your thoughts?
Well, no, what I'm tired of seeing this, Tom, is the way the media pans him. It's like he's a movie star. The way they do it, they zero in on him and make him a bigger than lifelike figure, and they over dramatized.
No, my point, Armin, is that to pin the label Waffle on him is too weak, not too strong. I'm not saying that's the right.
No, but see, he's the one that pinned it on Kerry first.
Yeah.
You got to remember, Bush in the Bush family, they brought up the criticism of Kerry as being the waffler.
Oh, I know. No, as a flip flopper, actually. And
right.
I, you know, I'm absolutely with you that these things need to be pointed out as the AP did today. But you know, anyhow,
well. That's why we could have a website that call it WFlipsAndFlops.com.
I'm frankly more concerned with the fact that he's selling our country out from underneath us. He's giving, he's destroying our environment. He's led us into a war that's going to make Vietnam look like a cakewalk, at least in terms of its impact on geopolitics. I mean, you know, whether we won or lost in Vietnam really wouldn't have had that much impact on the entire planet. Blowing up the Middle East could be a serious problem. It could bring Russia and China, who are both right on the border there, or right in that region, right back into this thing, and we could have the war of civilizations before you know it. And this is the real stuff. Okay, your point, Armin, because we've only got about 3 minutes here with Ronnie. So what was your question for Ronnie?
I totally agree with you. You know, but look, Nader, in my opinion, is absolutely, he cannot hide that he's showing his true motives, his true intentions, and his true colors. This guy, I think it's obvious now that from day one, in my opinion, he was nothing more, nothing less than an opportunist on an ego-bent hell trip.
Okay, we'll see. Armin, thanks for the call. What do you think, Ronnie?
Let me take a shot at that. In my opinion, it's important to keep fair to Nader. He's earned that from us. I think it's true to say that Nader. It's not true to say that Nader wanted to elect Bush. It is true to say that in 2000 he wanted to beat Gore. That was his motive. I didn't realize it at the time, but I realized it after the election, seeing what he'd done the last 10 days and reading Michael Moore on their decision to go into the swing states the last 10 days. I think he's shown Tom the same, and Herman, the same motive this time when saying, well, yes, it's true, the most important thing is to beat Bush, but just a week ago saying that Kerry's going to lose and he's going to sink the Democratic Party with him.
Yeah, this was
that shows
amazing.
The will to beat Kerry.
He's saying Kerry blew him.
I don't cast any reflections on the sincerity of anything that Ralph has done in his long career working for the public interest. But he's now so engaged in punishing the Democrats for their multiple sellouts that in this election, as in 2000, he is helping elect Bush. And he is accepting that as the consequence of his will to punish the Democrats. I don't think we can go any further with that. I think it was okay to risk it for a while, but once Bush showed his true international dangerousness, we just can't do that again.
Yeah, I agree. Well said, and we'll leave it at that. Ronnie Duggar, thank you for being with us today, Ronnie.
Thank you very much, Tom, and very good to hear such an excellent program here,
Thanks.
Ronnie.
Great to have you on. Well, it's the Tom Hartman Radio Program, 29 minutes past the hour. For more than 27 years, the Progressive magazine In These Times has provided groundbreaking coverage of movements for social, environmental, and economic justice. Author and broadcast personality Studs Terkel calls In These Times his bi-weekly tonic. In These Times features award-winning reporting and analysis of national and international news. Find In These Times on your newsstand or visit us online at www.inthesetimes.com or call 1-800-827-0270. 1-800-827-0270.
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Sarah Turner.
Employees of United Parcel Service filed a lawsuit on Monday against the world's largest package delivery company. The suit alleges violations of the Americans with Disabilities Act and claims that UPS has refused to reinstate permanently disabled employees in positions that would accommodate their medical restrictions. The suit also alleges that the company required employees returning to work following a medical leave of absence to provide a full medical release before they were permitted to work. It also says that the company refuses to meet with disabled employees to determine the extent of their disabilities. Filed in a federal court in Pittsburgh, if successful, the suit could cost the company millions of dollars and affect tens of thousands of employees.
A report released on Monday by the U.S. Commerce Department included the first new economic indicator from the U.S. Census Bureau in nearly 40 years. The new services indicator was created to more accurately gauge how service industries contribute to U.S. economic statistics. Frederick Knickerbocker, Associate Director for Economic Programs, Bureau of the Census,
census says survey data will be gathered quarterly now instead of annually.
If you add up all the services sectors, they're about $7.8 trillion. They are a gigantic piece of the American economy. They are the largest piece of the American economy. And so it's very important that we can begin to track quarter by quarter what's happening to sales, to revenues, the level of activity in these sectors. We're laying down the baseline to really begin to track these things on a quarterly basis.
Knickerbocker added these new numbers show revenues increased by 5.4% in key U.S. service industries.
Following in the footsteps of United Airlines, U.S. Airways has asked a judge for permission to skip a major pension payment due this week. The airline filed for bankruptcy for the second time in 2 years on Sunday, and it announced on Monday that it would not be able to make a payment to cover the pensions of machinists and flight attendants. The airline also said it's considering terminating those plans altogether. In addition, Delta Airlines said this weekend that it may file for bankruptcy if pilots continue to retire early. Pilots, concerned that the flagging airline may have to file for bankruptcy anyway, are choosing to retire early and take a lump sum payment of their pensions. Here's today's Dow Bob Report. The information technology market continues to weaken in the United States. A new poll of 500 hiring managers by the Information Technology Association of America reveals that 270,000 fewer IT workers will be hired this year than in 2003. A Department of Labor report released last month echoes the finding. Analysis of the report by Information Week revealed that the number of employed IT professionals has decreased by nearly 7% in the past 3 years, and IT unemployment has nearly doubled.
You've been listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Now let's get free of this right-wing crank in the White House. November 2nd, you can vote for that. 26 and a half minutes before the hour. Tom Hartman here, back with you. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. Bob Herbert reports, Mr. Papa George, a Republican state legislator, John Papa George in Michigan, if we do not suppress the Detroit vote, 80% black, he says, we're going to have a tough time in this election. Holy cow, what's going on in America? Speaking of what's going on in America, let's find out what's going on in Washington, D.C. Ellen Ratner with Talk Radio News Service, our correspondent in Washington, D.C. Hello, Ellen. Great to have you.
Hi. There is so much going on, I don't know where to start.
How about at the beginning?
Okay. Well, let's start. Today, the Democrats had another event where they're talking about this Operation Fortunate Son on the president, and Terry McAuliffe again is stressing that he lied. Well, as soon as people walked out of the Democratic National Committee today, the Republicans handed out to all the reporters something called the Carry Iraq documentary, and you can actually see it if you want, or parts of it, carryoniraq.com, in which case they have every single solitary flip-flop, etc., superimposed on a calendar. Now, I actually watched the thing, 20 minutes of it, and didn't think it was all that devastating. There are other people in our office who did watch it and thought it was stressing that he lied. Well, as soon as people walked out of the Democratic National Committee today, the Republicans handed out to all the reporters something called the Carry Iraq documentary, and you can actually see it if you want, or parts of it, carryoniraq.com, in which case they have every single solitary flip-flop, etc., superimposed on a calendar. Now, I actually watched the thing, 20 minutes of it, and didn't think it was all that devastating. There are other people in our office who did watch it and thought it was fairly devastating in terms of the flip-flop issue.
Mm-hmm.
But, I mean, it was pretty creative what the Republicans did standing outside the Democratic National Committee and handing out these videos to the press today.
Yeah.
So they're fighting on that front.
These guys
are
playing to win.
I mean, there's so much I don't know where to go. Hillary Clinton today just added two more things to the Homeland Security bill. The first was she wanted to add $625 million to get money into high-threat urban areas. But secondly,
I agree that hunting should be a condition
that should allow you to own a gun. I don't own a gun so I can go hunt. It's, the first reason is because I choose to own with the freedom to do it. The second reason is for self-defense, target shooting, anything else. And let me make a point here. You could, I'll use the same terminology that's used against gun owners. Why the abortion lobby says that every type of abortion should be legal up into, including the, what do they call it, the partial birth ban. What, a partial birth abortion ban?
Actually, you're misrepresenting their position, number 12. The pro-abortion folks say that abortion, and the law says that abortion should be legal until the fetus is viable, until it could survive outside the womb. Then it's a person. And then the only time you can abort it is if it's going to kill a mother if you don't.
Okay, here we go. They basically say the first trimester, second trimester, and third trimester abortion should be legal, right? And there should be no conditions where it's only a medical necessity. It's basically the woman's right to choose.
No, that's not what they say. That's not what they say. As I said just a minute ago, you're misrepresenting the position. But you don't want to talk about abortion. You want to talk about gun control. So finish your gun control point, because I got Ellen back on the line.
I'm using this as a comparison here.
But see, it's not a comparison. It's not a comparison. And I agree with you that people should be able to have weapons for self-defense. I never said that. I never said that they
should. You said only for hunting yesterday.
No, I said well, if that's what you think, if I actually said that, then I misspoke. If you think I said that, I apologize for not being clear. My point was that if somebody wants to own a gun, why shouldn't we, if a car can kill people, we license car drivers, why don't we just license gun owners? What's wrong with that? That was my point.
Hold on, I'll answer your question. California is a perfect example of licensing and registration does lead to confiscation. And they had a retroactive ban on certain types of rifles. If anybody who is naive enough to trust the California government and the promises made, just register your SKS rifle or whatever it may be, and we just want to, do it for crime control purposes, blah, 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 then they effected a ban on January 1st, 2001. Turn them in or make sure they leave the state.
Right, which leads us to the second question, which is why do you need a clip with 50 rounds in order to protect yourself?
Because the gun control argument is 10 years ago.
No, why do you need it? You tell
Listen.
Me.
Okay, I'll tell you.
All right.
Because if you give someone an inch, they're going to take a mile. So it's none of their business. Okay, I'll have five 10-round clips. Then they're going to say, what, I can't have five 10-round magazines on my person or something like that? It's just, it's BS is what it is, and it's incrementalism, and it's softening you up to basically get to the point where you can't have anything. Do you realize the number one gun that was used in the Columbine Massacre was a two-shot shotgun? It wasn't the Tech 9 pistol. It was the double-barrel shotgun.
Yeah. Okay. Good point. I'm not going to continue. I mean, we could just do this he said, she said thing forever here. We've both made our points. I appreciate the call, number 12. It's always great to hear from you. Let's go back to Ellen Ratner here. Ellen, you're back on the phone.
I am back. I don't know what happened. Actually, I want to make one little comment on guns, which are the Republicans are also trying to get legislation in through the House and through the Senate. It's not going to happen. Saying that D.C. gun control laws are unconstitutional and against the Second Amendment, and therefore they want to lift all of the gun registration laws and everything else that the District of Columbia has. How about that for local home rule?
Well, it's, on the one hand, you'd say it's a violation of the Tenth Amendment. On the other hand, I mean, that's what the folks in the South said when the federal government said, sorry, states' rights don't extend to segregation.
Right,
so,
exactly.
I mean, it's
anyway, back to, Hillary Clinton is trying to, she's actually furious about this, and she said that the president could just snap his fingers and get what he wants from Congress. He could issue an executive order that talks about how this money could be distributed.
We're talking here now about money for, like, New York City, for big metropolitan areas to protect against terrorism.
Instead of every state getting a piece of the
right,
pie.
Right, instead of Dick Cheney's Wyoming getting all this money. Yeah.
Exactly.
Okay. Go ahead.
Exactly.
Pardon my interrupting, but I want to,
So she's putting in these two amendments, and not sure whether they're going to get voted on today or not. She and Schumer, I guess, worked on the second of the two amendments. And the president's budget also calls for an additional $1.5 billion for this high threat. But it's not, his budget isn't it, but it isn't in the Homeland Security bill.
Hmm.
So, okay, shall I go on with
sure, yeah.
All other kinds of things?
Yeah.
Also today, Henry Waxman came out with a bill. I don't know what you've already talked about, but Henry Waxman came out with it, not a bill, a report. It's an 81-page report, and it talks about how the administration implemented major laws that really reduce access to government records.
The Freedom of Information Act, the Presidential Records Act.
Which they did actually within his first 6 months of being president.
Yeah, I saw that. Anna in his office sent that to me in email this morning. I haven't gotten to it today, and it's really mind-boggling when this is like censorship by fiat.
Right. I mean, the Presidential Records Act says that even though the 12 years pass and that those records go, you know, the presidential records essentially, unless they're really a reason to be classified, the public domain, that any president, past president or current president, can put a hold on those records.
Yeah.
So, okay, onward here.
Okay.
The other thing is that there is a Congressional Black Caucus is actually having their legislative conference, and a group of black people who are involved in justice issues put together the National Black Justice Coalition, and they have now put together a bunch of ads that they are want to put on both television and radio to talk about gays and lesbians and the discrimination against them in local communities. And so that is also taking place as we speak. So, it seems that there are things on my agenda.
It seems that there are these two issues that I think I see coming, and I think, frankly, we'll all be better for it. Two areas that have traditionally not been considered human rights and civil rights, and that is the right to have health care as a basic human right, and that John Kerry is advocating and that George Bush is ridiculing, and the rights of gays and lesbians to have civil rights protections the same as people of different ethnicities, different religions, and things like this. My sense of it is that both of these are coming. It may be 6-8 years. It may take another turn of the administrations, but that the American public is moving in the direction of both these issues.
I would agree with you. Last but not least, the Porter Goss hearings today, and that has been pretty interesting because time and time again, somebody's going to have to do a LexisNexis search at some point when the transcript comes out to see how many times he has said, look at my record.
Yeah.
And he keeps referring to it and referring to it. He was asked very specifically, should people be held accountable for withholding information prior to 9/11. He wouldn't answer that. He said, however, if he was the chairman, he would assess accountability. He was also asked about the fact that he said very, very partisan things, and he said, well, I said that as a Congress member, but as a CIA head, I would not act in a partisan kind of way.
Do you think that's, Ellen, number one, a reasonable response? I mean, because if not, then basically what we're saying is politicians need not apply for jobs like head of the CIA or Secretary of State or whatever, which historically actually has been pretty much how it's been run, except for maybe the 1870s through the 1890s. Or do you think do you think that politicians should be allowed to separate themselves from politics when they go into theoretically non-political positions? Or do you think we just can't trust them?
Theoretically, I totally agree with you in that, you know, sometimes you say partisan things, et cetera. But this guy was head of a committee after 9/11. He said most of his partisan remarks in the last year against Senator Kerry, knowing that Senator Kerry was running for office, and his being head of the 9/11, head of the Committee on Intelligence, that's a little different than some, you know, sort of young congressman firing away.
Yeah, wasn't there one question that it was put to him where, you know, would you investigate this that had to do with 9/11, and he said no, but bring me a blue dress with a stain on it, and I'll look into that. Do you remember what the issue was around that he made that joke?
I remember something vaguely, but I don't have the exact wording.
Yeah, okay.
On that. He was also asked why he didn't have the 9/11 commission report that his committee was supposed to come out with. He said, well, you know, I'm not head of the committee anymore.
Yeah.
I mean,
In other words, he's giving lame answers.
He's giving pretty lame answers.
And it's because he knows he's going to be, he knows he's going to be, what do you call it?
He can get away with it at this point.
Yeah, he's going to be confirmed. And so he can, as long as he doesn't just, totally thumb his nose at these guys, he just kind of puts up with it, keeps his head down, doesn't say anything outrageous, and he's going to be the director of the CIA.
Exactly.
So,
no question.
Yeah, hopefully, well... so much hangs on this election November 2nd. So much hangs on
it
this.
It certainly does.
The future of the
certainly
United States.
Does. But I mean, honestly, I just want to ask you a question. They are talking about how President Bush lied on his military records, et cetera.
Mm-hmm.
But is that the right strategy for the Democratic National Committee to be taking right now? And I'm not so sure.
Yeah, you think it's going to backfire?
I don't know whether it's going to backfire, but I think they really need to start hammering away at things such as the economy.
Well, see, I see this as part of as part of one piece of fabric, and if they can integrate this, I think that they will actually have a successful campaign strategy, and that is that George Bush is a son of privilege, that he went to Andover and Yale and Harvard. He never has really had to have a job in his life. Every business he tried to do, he failed at and was bailed out by his father's friends or the Bin Laden family in every single case. He lost
hammering away at things such as the economy.
Well, see, I see this as part of as part of one piece of fabric, and if they can integrate this, I think that they will actually have a successful campaign strategy, and that is that George Bush is a son of privilege, that he went to Andover and Yale and Harvard. He never has really had to have a job in his life. Every business he tried to do, he failed at and was bailed out by his father's friends or the Bin Laden family in every single case. He lost millions of dollars for a lot of investors. The one business that he was semi-profitable at, the baseball team, he was only successful because he was able to force the good citizens of Dallas to put, what was it, $14 million into building a
right.
stadium. By,
My worry is that it didn't totally work in the first election.
But see, it wasn't. I think that the character issue, the whole thing about he lied to get into the city. I think the fact that he lied and is continuing to lie to this day about using influence to get into the National Guard could be the thing. What do you think? Yep, Ellen is gone. Jeez. Sorry about that, folks. So much for, hello, John Ashcroft. I know you don't like Ellen and I talking, so. Anyhow, thanks to Ellen Ratner, Talk Radio News Service on there. Or is that, Ellen's back on line three. Hey, Ellen.
I don't know why we've had line trouble today, but
yeah.
In any case, I wish I knew the perfect formula,
yeah.
And I hope that they're using the right strategy. I just hope.
Yeah. Well, and those of us who are in a position to tell the truth just need to be out there telling the truth. And we don't need to spin things. Okay. Thanks a lot, Ellen. Great to hear from you. We don't need to spin things. We don't need to, it's so scary. And here again, we've got John Papa George in Detroit, the congressman from Ed, saying we've got to suppress the Detroit vote, suppress the black vote. He reiterated to me in a phone conversation, this Bob Herbert, last Friday, that he did indeed mean that the vote in Detroit needed to be kept down. A lot of other Republicans, Bob Herbert notes, have similar views about the vote in areas with large African-American populations. I'm telling you, these guys absolutely believe the ends justifies the means, and they will do anything to achieve power. That's dangerous. 10 minutes before the hour.
This is Veronique Raskin. I'm the president and founder of the Organic Wine Company. What happened when you, Thomas, gave us a plug? The phone started ringing. The first person said, whatever it is that you're selling, I want to buy it. And for the next few hours, the phone rang nonstop. The people who listen to your program are what they call in the business my target audience, people who are conscious and responsible and try to do the right thing and try to think for themselves. I would encourage anyone to advertise on the Thomas Hartmann Show, absolutely, without question, whether that be on the national level or the local level, and you will absolutely get results. The way you can learn more about our imported organically grown wines from France is by calling us. The phone number is 1-888-ECO-WINE,
or you can visit our site at www.ecowine.com.
Now, it's time for This Billionaire Moment.
Some are charging that there's a connection between Halliburton being awarded no-bid contracts in Iraq and the fact that Vice President Dick Cheney used to run the company. Of course there's a connection. Would you rather do business with a bunch of strangers who may charge less or with a dear, dear friend who knows what's in your heart? That's why Dick gets $1 million severance check from us at Halliburton every year. It reminds him who his friends are. Friends shouldn't have to compete for contracts. Friends don't need government oversight, and friends know who their friends are. Cronyism sounds like such a bad word. Try friendship instead. A really lucrative friendship. I'm Xenophobe for This Billionaire Moment.
This Billionaire Moment is brought to you by BillionairesForBush.com.
Here come the billionaires!
Hi, this is Tom Hartman. It's been said that if you scratch the surface of any issue of social or economic injustice, you'll find the issue of corporate power and corporate personhood. Join me for the facts on September 24th. I'll be speaking in Portland, Oregon at the Unitarian Church on Main Street at 7 p.m. For more information, call Marcia at 503-665-3957. That's 503-665-3957.
Can you imagine a world in which all kids live healthy, safe, productive, and prosperous lives? Well, that world is within our grasp, and there's a way to reach it. It's called Ecolonomics. And to learn more, just pull up DennisWeaverNow.com and learn how to get a free report of our Ecolonomics educational program and how together we can build a world of prosperity without pollution. DennisWeaverNow.com. DennisWeaverNow.com. DennisWeaverNow.com.
A long-term study of Yellowstone National Park shows that wildfires are good for fish and other aquatic life. I'm Steve Pomplin for Earthwatch Radio. One of the arguments against letting wildfires burn is that they destroy forested slopes and leave the land open to erosion. But a new book about the 1988 fires in Yellowstone National Park shows that even erosion sometimes has its place in nature. Linda Wallace is a wildfire expert at the University of Oklahoma and the editor of After the Fires, a collection of reports on Yellowstone's recovery from the 1988 event. She says she was surprised by one study's finding that erosion is vital to aquatic life in the park's rivers and streams.
The erosion processes in Yellowstone are very, very important. And one of the things that the geological history has shown us is that we have these massive amounts of erosion occurring off and on. It turns out that even for the aquatic systems, that these erosion processes are very, very critical because they set up new spawning beds in streams and creeks, and that actually helps fish populations in the years following a fire.
Wallace says the influx of soil and ash is initially tough on fish, killing many of them.
During an erosion event, the creeks and streams, of course, get extremely muddy and fishing is impossible. Fish will die with their gills clogged. Those fish that manage to survive, though, will find the next year wonderful spawning area, and then the populations will actually respond positively.
These periodic erosion events also deliver minerals and other vital nutrients into the streams, an essential process in a nutrient-poor landscape. Wallace says these findings add support for the view that wildfires are an important part of many ecosystems, even some that are underwater. Earthwatch Radio is a service of the Gaylord Nelson Institute and the Sea Grant Program at the University of Wisconsin.
Fearlessly exploring the truth of the day, here's Tom Hartman.
It's coming through a hole in the air from those nads in Tiananmen Square.
And welcome back, my friends. I have in my hands here the 1983 edition of the American Heritage Dictionary, based on the new Second College edition. 60,000 definitions, 10,000 new words and meanings, 400 photographs and illustrations. On it goes. And let me read you the definition, the entire definition, from beginning to end, every single word for the word fascism. fascism, a system of government that exercises a dictatorship of the extreme right, typically through the merging of state and business leadership, together with belligerent nationalism.
Colin Powell did it with AOL Time Warner. John Ashcroft did it with Microsoft and Monsanto. Interior Secretary Gail Norton did it with BP Amoco. Condoleezza Rice did it with Chevron. Ooh, Donald Rumsfeld did it with big boys Sears, Kellogg, and Allstate.
Of course the Bush administration is in bed with its corporate donors.
George Bush did it with Goldman Sachs, Citigroup, and Enron.
Did you think they were giving it away?
Yeah, a billionaires for a Bush spot there. And it is the essence, this the distilled essence of fascism. Yeah, I know people don't like it when you use that word. They think, well, Hitler was a fascist. You're talking about the Holocaust. No, Hitler wasn't a fascist. He started out as a fascist. He ended up a maniacal dictator and one of the most evil and justly reviled people on earth in history. But fascism is a political system. Very straightforward, very, very cleanly defined. Mussolini, who invented it, clearly defined it in the Italian dictionary. He said fascism should more correctly be called corporatism, for it is the merging of state and business interests. When you get a bunch of corporate flacks who have taken over your government, you have fascism. And if you then have a belligerent, nationalistic, belligerent foreign policy, you have full-blown toxic fascism. This is a warning, my friends. This is an absolute warning about what is happening here in the United States. The Bush campaign flew to Philadelphia last Thursday, by the way. Buyer's Choice, B-Y-E-R-S Choice company that George was campaigning in front of. Guess who? Swift Boat Veterans adds backers. Helping out his friends. Thanks to Louise for engineering or for producing our show today, to Ira for engineering it. Thanks to Shelby for streaming us around the planet, and Mike Toth and Ben Birch for our archives. Thanks to the folks in our chat room for showing up, to Jay for producing our music. Thanks to you for listening. Do appreciate it. Tom Hartman here with you. We'll see you tomorrow, same time, same place.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
Visit iowapeace.com for books on justice and peace. The Last Liberal Outlaw is Mike Palasek's new novel. Chuck Gregory with BlueEar.com had this to say. Palasek is at his best when writing about small-town America. It's a place he clearly loves, even as he pokes fun at its quirks and reveals the sickness that lies just below the surface. It's a place he knows, and he shares his knowledge in delightfully original ways, even as he cries out for change. We haven't had a writer like Palasek since Kurt Vonnegut was at his peak. Mike is an Iowa author, former federal prisoner for peace, small-town newspaper reporter, seminarian, and nominee for the U.S. House of Representatives in the Iowa Democratic Party 2000 election.